it's none of it's good. It's all garbage.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Yeehaw!
That's right.
Oh, all right.
That's getting us in the mood.
I am.
For some Montana rustling.
That's right.
Whatever the fuck that is. And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Sher.
What up, everyone?
Yeah. And
the hell did that come from?
Not getting us ready for Montana action.
Yeah. That's probably about right, though, right?
That was the broiest greeting you ever did, dude. Like...
What up?
What up?
What up? Your voice lowered like a couple
of decibels. Tell Sloan I said what up.
Yes. We're going to go back on our road trip today.
On the road again.
The most time-honored tradition of all, the road trip.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Yeah.
And, shotgun. Yeah. Today we're going to go to Montana.
Yeah.
So a big fucking state.
Yeah. So you and your wife are the only people from Tennessee who have ever been to Montana,
the
right?
The only. Mm-hmm. Actually, some other members of my wife's family. Yeah, I've been to Montana. One little specific tiny little part of it near Glacier National Park. It's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. I can't tell you how awesome it is to walk out of your hotel room and see snow-capped mountains behind the Walmart across the street.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the day we got there, this was a few years ago, the day we got there, it was 35 degrees and snowing.
Mm.
And the day we left, it was 75 degrees and sunny.
Oh, that's wild.
Montana is weird in the summer, man. But it's gorgeous.
That was in the summer? It was 35 and
yeah,
snowing?
Yeah, that was in June. Jeez.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I there's some states that I think of as close to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for some reason, I don't think of that with Montana. I don't know why. Like, it, obviously, you know, you look at a map, it's easy enough to see. But, like, there seems to be, like when you go into Michigan and you go into Minnesota and all that,
yeah.
There seems to be more Canadian influence there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But well, I don't. I guess it's also that we don't see much out of Montana or Idaho or even Washington.
Yeah.
To really see the Canadian influence.
It's also that what the part of Canada directly north of Montana is basically nothing there.
Flatland.
No, yeah.
Matter of fact, if you fly into Calgary in Canada, you can see the entirety of Calgary.
Yeah.
Because it's completely flat, and then it's right next to the Rockies. So yeah. It's a wild juxtaposition.
I need to just go to the Pacific Northwest and hang out and so I can say that I did it.
Yep. Well, and you can visit LaRange when you're out there.
Yeah.
You can visit Jeremy Simser when you're out there.
That's right.
Plenty of good reasons, excuses, if
that's
you
right.
will,
that's right.
to go. But Montana's gorgeous and doesn't have a whole ton of movies set there.
Nope.
Nope.
And we're going to get through them pretty quick.
There's also a ton of Westerns there that aren't going to be really mentioned here because... We haven't seen all the Burt Lancaster and John Wayne's and Gary Cooper's from 1953 or whatever it is.
Nor do I really want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love Westerns in general. And I love some of those old ones, but it's just not something that hits my tickle box.
You know who...
Don't make me laugh.
No idea.
There's a guy on Reddit who's really angry about how much I giggle on the podcast.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, people love hearing you laugh.
He'll get over it, but don't make me laugh so much.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing what people do get annoyed about a lot of times.
My tickle box. Like,
it's like, really, out of that 2 hours, you zeroed in on that one moment.
Huh? I do not like your expressions of mirth.
Right.
I hate that people are having fun.
You know who really wanted to go to Montana? Vasily from Hunt for October.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
I would like to have seen Montana.
Yeah.
They let you drive state to state? No papers?
Yeah. Didn't he want to settle down with like a large-breasted woman or something like that?
Yeah.
He did.
And then he's like, in fact, he said, I may have to marry two women. let's start off here. We talked about Arrival a little bit in the last podcast. How much of that is that all Montana?
Yeah.
Or is that
when she gets to the site? Now, I don't know if they actually identified what university she works for, because I went through that when we were doing the Sins video, and I tried to figure out where it was.
Mm-hmm.
But the site, the American site that the ships land, is in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that surrounding area is set in Montana.
Do you think they picked it because there's so much open land out there?
Probably so. Although, didn't they have... No, there was one over the ocean. I guess they didn't land in like heavily populated areas across the world.
Yeah, I think that, I feel like that's part of it, if I'm remembering right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know.
So you didn't have a bunch of like drunk people throwing beer cans at it and shit? Yeah.
Well, plus, you know, Denis Villeneuve wanted to have really pretty scenery.
Mm-hmm. And he got it.
He got it, for sure. That movie's gorgeous.
It is.
Arrival is amazing. It's one of the best movies of this decade, I would say.
I would agree.
I think so, too. Probably... Now, you've seen, you've been watching the Sharp Objects thing, as we talked about.
Oh, man, I'm dying for somebody to watch
that. I'm going to start.
Either crazy or this is one of the best things I've ever seen.
And so you would you say that she is even better in Sharp Objects, her performances, than Arrival? Because I think Arrival is almost peak Amy Adams.
I
know it's apples and oranges.
It is. I feel like what I'm watching on Sharp Objects is going to be career defining. It's going to be when we do a montage of her at her memorial in 50 years 80 years, hopefully. I'm not trying to pinpoint her death. This will be one of the pieces of work that shows up first, is what I'm guessing. She's fantastic in Arrival. I'm not trying to take anything away from that at all. It's just this is where I feel like she has finally Meryl Streeped herself, where she is going to be upper echelon talent forever now.
Do you think, going back to her and Arrival, when she gets this story out and the language and the key and all that stuff, does that mean that now everyone that reads this book has the same ability as she does?
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like, it felt like...
It doesn't seem like it.
It felt like because she already had that ability, and that's why she's, you know, that's why, I don't know. I always felt like, wasn't she having flashbacks before she started reading the language and everything?
I can already tell you what's going to happen is next Monday when the podcast comes out, Dicer's going to come on Twitter and explain to us what we don't understand right now.
Yeah. And he probably does.
Which is fair, because I haven't seen the movie enough to really know. My takeaway was that she was unique in the ability to see time the way the heptapods could. And not all Americans could read the... Not all
it can't be. It actually couldn't be, because then Renner would have known what was going to happen to his daughter.
Exactly.
Well, that doesn't mean necessarily he would have had the ability to do it, just because... that doesn't mean everybody has the ability to do it. I mean, it would be, I think, a select few, if any.
So not only do you have to understand the language, you have to have some sort of innate ability.
I think so. Although
that was my take.
Some part of the movie also might explain that she's looking at these symbols so much that she started dreaming in that quote unquote language or whatever. But that, I mean, yeah, I think she just had the ability. That's the reason why she was the one. She was sort of the chosen one by the end of it. She's the only one who could really make it, you know, understand any of the things that are going on.
I think of the broader implications, though, because it's the movie focuses on just her daughter and all that stuff, but she's able to see like war, disaster, you know, anything happening on the earth, market collapse, things like that. I mean, does she save the world, essentially, or does she make herself rich like Biff and Back to the Future?
You would think if there were more people who could do it, there would have been more who could do it. One out of 8 billion people are the only people who can like figure this out. Like maybe there were more, but they weren't in the position to actually study all that stuff too. There's always the chance that some kid in India or some kid like in the UK knows how to do this, but they didn't understand what it was. Just like her, she didn't know.
And she had access to all this information as it was coming in.
Yeah, there's that point where she's like, I've been dreaming of this child. Why? You know, and she doesn't know what that is or anything. Until finally she's like, oh, she has her big aha moment. There's probably a few out there that are doing it. It's kind of like X-Men, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's millions out there. It's just that she would just happen to be in the position to figure out that.
In the short story that Arrival is based on, it explains that she has a higher midichlorian.
That's right.
Those damn midichlorians.
They didn't have time for the movie to explain that.
Yeah.
Arrival's great. We love it.
Yeah, Arrival is awesome. Then there is Call of the Wild, 2009 version.
You remember reading this? Jack London?
I did. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I remember reading it, but I think it was, or did I read White Fang?
I was going to say there were two or three Wilderness Wolf books, and I think I read them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the one where like the wolf dog hybrid basically shows up like injured and they take him in and he becomes like one of theirs, but he hears the dog wolf dog, hears the call of the wild, and eventually they have to let him go. Spoiler.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You motherfucker.
They're making some movie, or it's coming out in either this weekend.
Oh, the dog movie?
Yeah, the one where the wolves evolved into dogs, very beginning of it or whatever. I guess it's going to span over generations because it looks like it starts off with the kids befriending a wolf in a cave, and then it looks like they go through hundreds of years of evolution where the wolf turned into the dog.
This is a movie?
Yeah. Wow. It's going to be an IMAX and everything.
Oh, is it okay. Really? So it's not like, okay, that makes more sense than like, I'm picturing like an Illumination film. Like,
no, it's based on the actual real evolution of wolves into dogs and everything.
Well, I will not be seeing.
I was going to say, this does not sound very entertaining.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't look bad, what I've seen.
I haven't seen it, so I can't say.
So Call of the Wild, I haven't seen this version.
Yeah, this has got Christopher Lloyd in it. It was 2009. It's perfectly fine. Yeah. I watched it with my kid.
That's the thing. Like, all these, like, really well-known classic literature, like, have been done 500 times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find probably 800 versions of this out there. But, good story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, great story.
Clay Pigeons. I've seen it. I don't remember a thing about it.
Oh, really?
Vince Vaughn is in it.
Yeah.
I've seen it as
Joaquin
well.
Joaquin Phoenix is in it.
Vince Vaughn is a serial killer in this.
Oh,
and Joaquin Phoenix is just kind of lout, slacker type of guy, which every movie in the 90s was about in some form, and has some thing with his friend's suicide. And he meets up with Vince Vaughn, who befriends him, kind of like Billy Bob in Fargo, and who kills like somebody that he knows. And so the FBI gets involved with Janine Garofalo playing the agent.
Mm-hmm.
She is a weed-smoking agent. And shenanigans ensue. It's
shenanigans?
Funny.
Is it a funny movie?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's like a dark comedy.
I remember liking it okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything. I just the only thing I remember about this movie, I've said this before, is that there was a sort of a triangle of movies starring Vince Vaughn, Joaquin Phoenix, or Anne Heche.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had Clay Pigeons, you had Return to Paradise, which had all three of them in it. And then you had Psycho, which had Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche in it.
Yep.
So, like, that was that little triangle.
Vince Vaughn went through an evil phase.
He did.
This and Disturbing Behavior and Psycho.
Yeah, like, this was, right after he did Swingers and, like he was trying to do that whole...
Wait, yeah, he was trying to rough
it. Is it Disturbing Behavior?
No, you're thinking about the Katie Holmes one, but it's Disturbing...
The John Travolta...
Disturbia?
No, my stepdad is evil and beats people up, and John Travolta has to save
him. We just talked about this movie not too long ago.
Wasn't he in that?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, but it's not called Disturbing Behavior. That's
that's that horror movie with Katie Holmes.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking it's called...
Something Behavior.
Drunken...
Drunken Behavior.
Drunken Disorder.
Drunken Behavior.
There's a new papa in my mama's bed. What's it called?
Domestic Disturbance.
Domestic Disturbance, yes.
There's like if this is uncut, there's gonna be 100 people going, it's fucking Domestic Disturbance.
Those are fun moments.
Yeah. I know, because I feel the same way when I listen to podcasts sometimes. People are like, what is that movie? Clay Pigeons is pretty good.
Yeah, it was a fun movie. Reminded me a lot of, you remember U-Turn?
Yeah. Yeah.
It reminded me of that kind of story.
You know what I remember U-Turn for?
Claire Danes.
Well, Claire Danes for sure. But the Johnny Cash song, the Ring of Fire, that always played for the sheriff, Powers Booth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They play that song maybe 92 times in that movie.
Claire Danes does that part where she's like, well, how come Patsy Cline don't put out no more records? Sean Penn's like, because she's dead.
What a weird pull.
Yeah. Then we have Disorganized Crime.
Yeah, man.
Is this an 80s movie?
Don't kid yourself. It's not that organized.
I never saw this.
Yeah, 1989. This had Fred Gwynne This is crazy. Fred Gwynn, Lou Diamond Phillips, Ruben Blades. Where the fuck did that guy go?
Oh, I know. No kidding.
Corbin Burnson, Ed O'Neill, and Hoyt Axton.
That's definitely a lot of 80s stars.
Corbin Burnson, who's looking like Walt from Breaking Bad at this point.
Ooh.
Is he really?
Yeah, man. Like, he came up in something recently I saw, and I was like, whoa, that's fucking Corbin Burnson. He looks so different. And he looked like, I was like, is that Bryan Cranston at first?
And wow.
And then whatever. Look him up. Look at Corbin Burnson on the IMDb. Tell me he doesn't look like fucking Walt, or he's trying to be Walt.
Speaking of Bryan Cranston, did you see the announcement yesterday that he's going to do a Broadway version of Network? Mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Yeah.
He's going to do that role on Broadway.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
He's going to knock it out of the... Wow, he kind of looks like Jesus. He looks like the evil stepdad on Entourage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The one that has the hot 25-year-old wife?
Yeah.
He's evil stepdad or future stepdad.
So you've seen Disorganized Crime.
Yes.
What is this about?
It's been a long time. They're actually in, I think it's a branch of the mob that goes to Montana to rob a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's riding a line between like actually trying to be a heist film and trying to be a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it ever really succeeds at either of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the performances, it seems like everybody's having a good time. So... You know, I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. And then we have The Horse Whisperer, which was Scarlett Johansson's first movie.
I remember reading a great deal about her before that movie came out because she was like some big discovery.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously she's gone on to have an awesome career.
Yeah. Robert Redford directed and starred in, and I think Kristin Scott Thomas.
Yeah. It's pretty goddamn boring. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Well, this was one of those big books, yep. Like, you know, Bridges of Madison County that was on the bestseller list forever.
This one has a lot less adultery.
It has a lot less adultery.
Any accidental incest?
Yeah.
I saw it once. I remember being bored to tears. And I like horse movies.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's great because, you know, I mean, it's a simple story. It's like she gets injured and her buddy, who I think is Kate Bosworth in this movie. Kate Bosworth. Yeah. She gets killed. So like the horse is all crazy now and Scarlett Johansson, I think it's like a foot amputated or something like that. And so to fix the horse, Redford has to fix her too. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice, adorable story and lots of nice scenery and stuff like that.
And then they would later star in Captain America Winter Soldier together.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the rest of the story.
That's the rest of the story.
So I've been watching this show, this is as good a time as any, on Paramount Network, Yellowstone,
mm-hmm.
starring Kevin Costner. Surprise, Wes Bentley.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really in this? He is in this. And
had a career.
Taylor Sheridan wrote, and I think he's directed every episode so far. And it has just continued to get pulpier and sappier. And like there was a scene last night where Costner is this cattle magnate, basically. He owns more land and more cattle than anyone in Montana. And at one point he's driving in last night's episode and he sees a bunch of Asian tourists out in a field gaping at a grizzly bear. And he walks out there. And instead of like trying to save them from the bear, he starts yelling at them about how they're trespassing on his land.
Hmm.
One of the tourist guys yells something in a language, and it's interpreted to him as he says, it's criminal, it's morally wrong for one man to own this much land. Because Costner does this whole, from that mountain to that mountain is all my land. And Costner says in the most serious way possible, this is America. We don't share land. And I'm not going to stop watching. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I am having the time of my life. But the quality has dipped for me, seriously. And it's become this really expensive soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy from Hell or High Water, the Jeff Bridges' partner, is one of the main characters. He's like the head of a Native American, basically think tank kind of nonprofit that's trying to basically preserve land as much as possible. In the premiere, I should have known, in the premiere of this show, Costner is mad about a subdevelopment going in. And so he literally dynamites a new path for a river to take to ruin the development plans of the subdivision.
Nice.
Literally dynamites a new river.
Yeah.
That's the kind of show we're watching. But it's set in Montana and it's gorgeous.
Nice.
It looks beautiful. But this show could be subtitled Obsessed with Horses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like there have been multiple scenes about horse training. and cowboy training. There's like a new greenhorn on the ranch in one episode, and they literally duct tape this motherfucker on the wildest horse and leave him there for 8 hours. So he's broken and bloody and bruised when he's done, and the horse is finally broken.
Wow. Like,
but last night there was an episode with his daughter trying to learn to ride, and the horse kept bucking her off because she was gripping too tight because she's too anxious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why I started talking about this. It's set in Montana, and it looks gorgeous. I cannot recommend you watch this show. Because you'll be
now
mad
you're
at
invested,
me.
Though.
You'll be mad at me if you
it's
do.
It's a wreck of Warren.
Yeah, it's a wreck of Warren. And it's already been picked up for season two. I have no idea where they're going to go. But yeah, it's probably the most Montana-iest thing I've ever seen.
I'm down with like prairie porn and like, you know, mountain porn and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you then you should probably at least check out an episode or two because it's chock full of that stuff.
Yeah.
And the brother guy from the 50 Shades series is playing one of Costner's sons. Remember the brother in the 50 Shades series?
Yeah. He's the one that got married to. Yeah. Yeah. The best friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There
all
you
right.
go. Yeah. The brother guy. I tell you who else is in the Horse Whisperer. Sam Neill. He finally got to go to Montana. Actually, he nice. Got to go to Montana in Jurassic Park, which is also listed here. We've talked about Jurassic Park. Obviously, we talked about it in Hawaii, I believe, because they shot a lot of the park on Hawaii and everything. And
we
Jurassic-
talked about it on our episode we did for Isla Nublar.
Yeah, exactly. When we went there and we talked about all the movies that were set there. But there was Jurassic Park. There's also Jurassic Park 3.
You know, Montana scene that one of the only Montana scenes in Jurassic Park. I went back and watched this again. So the little kid is being annoying to Alan Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being a dick. Right.
Yep.
But he's also like, I don't know.
Looks
9,
like an
10.
Oversized turkey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant fucking goes over there and essentially just. It fucks with him.
Hey, he ends that. That kid is over.
He's like,
but
maybe
you know
he would hit you like
that's
this.
That's exactly his character arc, right? He doesn't like kids.
Yeah, but that's
and
brutal, man. He's like,
it's brutal, but
your intestines will spill out.
It's brutal, but I think it's also true. I don't think it's like, you know, it's like anything that hasn't been done before or whatever.
True.
And he's sitting there talking to Laura Dern saying, you know, I don't like babies because they smell, you know, and all that. And he's like, babies do not smell. And he's like, or kids do not smell. It's like, well, baby smell. But all that. And yeah, I can see that. It just goes to show that he doesn't like kids. And then he grows during
that's
the
right.
movie. And you see how good of a father he could be because he's never had kids around.
Whereas in Jurassic Park 3, he has no arc whatsoever.
No.
So that was Joe Johnston that did
it
that,
did.
Right?
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember anything about
Jurassic
Park 3.
Oh, I just watched it a couple days ago.
Is there any redeeming qualities to it?
I remembered it not being the worst thing I had ever seen. This is basically the best I could say about it. And I mean, I would watch it before I watched Jurassic World.
It has that that one like memorable moment where Grant is having the whatever, what is it? He's on the plane and he's knocked out and the raptor starts talking to him.
Yeah.
Alan. Alan.
Yeah, they introduced that Spinosaurus, purple dinosaur that was way bigger than T-Rex.
This was the Jurassic Park that was supposed to implement, or either this or Lost World was supposed to implement that one from the book that could blend in with the surroundings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And never really got to that. Not even in Jurassic World where they're, you know, they make suddenly the fucking big ass dinosaur disappears.
Yeah.
The dumbest fucking thing ever. You know, it would be really cool to just be like, hiding in the in the thing and be like Predator and shit going through there.
That'd be awesome.
You know, I mean,
Predator meets Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
I'm in.
It's gonna happen. I'm sure.
As much as I complain about shit, I should not say I'm in for that. I really should not.
But Jurassic Park 3 had, I guess it was more pterodactyls and stuff like
that. They had the aviary scene.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really much. I think that no. There's really not a lot to praise, but there's not a lot. I don't think there's that much to criticize.
Well, there's got to be a drop in quality because obviously it wasn't based on a Crichton book. The first two were.
Right.
There's no Spielberg. Yeah.
You got Tommy Tomasino in here.
Is Ian Malcolm in this at all? Is Jeff Goldblum in there?
No, Laura Dern's in one of the early scenes because he like goes over to have dinner at her house or some shit. just for, I don't know, a cameo, and she needed $50,000 or something.
Yeah.
But no, no Ian Malcolm. And then William H. Macy and Ta Leone are.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then Michael Jeter is leading the mercenary crew, because when you think of Michael Jeter, you think mercenary.
Yes.
And then,
aren't Macy and Leone the money people in this?
They're the parents of the kid. The stepdad, they're divorced. The stepdad took the kid to Costa Rica, as you do, bought a parasailing around the dinosaur island package, as you do, and they're literally, the boat gets attacked by, well, it's too smoky for you to really know, but they're looking down, they come through, and then there's no one driving the boat anymore, and they get detached from their line, and they parasail onto the island somewhere, and stepdad dies, and kid lives alone for, I don't know, 3 months, what have you. So Ta Leone and they just bald-faced lie to his ass. They basically, they say, we've gotten permission to fly over the island. We're super rich. He's not. He owns like a tile store. And we want you to be our guide and point out the dinosaurs and the whatnot, because the government's given us permission. It's all just a big lie. They fucking land the plane like 30 seconds after they get there. And he's just like, what? You can't land. Anyway. Yeah, it's not very ridiculous. We've already talked way too long.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Then we have Knockaround Guys. I never saw this either.
Oh, yeah.
This was, notable because Brian Koppelman and David Levien, the creators of Billions, did this movie.
I saw this movie.
And also Rounders, right?
And Rounders, is, yeah. And it's notable only to me because somebody, I was working at Hollywood 27 at the time, and we had a sneak preview of it, and somebody built it wrong, so it went through like I think a third or fourth reel the soundtracks were switched. And so it was like one of those things where it's like everything's cool, and then all of a sudden you just just terrible. So we had to fix that shit during the sneak preview. That's the only thing I remember about
all those fans that were ready to see their Knockaround Guys.
Well, that's
on
the thing
night.
About sneak previews. They're always sold out. I mean, they have people. I mean, people come out of the fucking woodwork to see something free.
Yep. I mean, they had, I guess Vin Diesel wasn't as big as he became.
Well, this is 2001. This is the Fast and the Furious had come out.
That's true.
So
yeah.
he I think he was fairly well known. Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, and Barry Pepper too from Saving Private Ryan. Seth Green, John Malkovich, Dennis Hopper's in this.
Yeah. So a huge cast. I don't remember anybody saying it was all that good.
It sucks. It sucks bad. It's not like I think if I'm remembering it correctly, like Seth Green is supposed to be the comic relief, but he's not that funny. He's not allowed to be that funny.
Oh, yeah.
John Malkovich is trying to be like the badass hitman, as a John Malkovich character would be. And they fucking kill Seth Green.
Well, there goes us ever getting Brian Koppelman on the podcast. Brian Koppelman has his own podcast. It's called The Moment, by the way. It's really good.
Interesting.
I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff
since. I'm sure if you asked him honestly about Knockaround Guys, he'd give you, some proud about some things and some other things I'm not so proud about, probably.
That's how I describe every single time I have sex.
Yeah, that's
Look,
true.
It's not good.
Proud of some things I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Not proud of how some things turned out.
End result was fine though. The last of the dog men.
Yeah, you remember this?
I do. I don't think I saw it. Was it Tom Berenger that was in this?
Yes.
And Kurtwood Smith?
Yes.
Wow.
And Barbara Hershey.
Barbara Hershey.
And it's Native American is this like a white people versus Native Americans?
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So the dog men are like this tribe that has essentially been run out of existence from white culture, and they'll kill anybody that knows what they are or where they are or anything like that. So it's incredibly dangerous, and you don't want to get involved with them and all that stuff. Berenger is a bounty hunter that's trying to catch somebody, but that person was killed by the dogmen, so he's got to somehow interact with the dogmen, and it's a whole thing. It was interesting. I saw it once.
Yeah, and it's a possibility I even saw this and just don't remember much about
it. It's not memorable. The scenery is really beautiful, though.
Yeah.
My name, Tab Murphy, directed it.
Yeah.
Tab.
Hey. Must be short for Tabitha.
I'll take a tab, please.
Yes.
We got to order something.
Here's a movie that everybody in the fucking world talked about in the 90s, and I still haven't seen. It's The Legends of the Fall.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
Nope.
Oh, wow. It's just nature porn, really.
It is.
And, like, I hate love my family, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, the complex relationships of men in your family. And this is the one with Aidan Quinn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
Brad Pitt.
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins has, like, some kind of, like, facial disfigurement.
Yeah, I think so. This movie just, I don't know how long it is. I could look it up right now. It feels like it's 6 hours long, though.
Well, it is. That's part of why. And all I remember is everyone, literally every character in the movie sleeps with Julie Ormond.
Yeah.
Even Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's E.T.'s in this. Henry.
Yeah. Henry Thomas.
Who has also played a serial killer of the week on Criminal Minds.
I think it's E.T.'s monster he played.
E.T.'s monster.
This was one of those that Edward Zwick of Glory and Courage Under Fire fame got this. That I seem to remember this more for the cinematography. Like, mm-hmm. This is John Tall is one of those legendary cinematographers. He's won 2 Oscars. He won for this. But he used to be like on that list too. Like, just every year, John Tall, I think he got nominated like 3 or 4 times in a row or something. He did Braveheart.
Yeah, there are a lot of housewives and house moms that watched Legends of the Fall for the cinematography.
And that's right. That's correct.
Brad Pitt, man, he was fucking foxy in this movie.
I would do him.
Yep.
Well, that was like the other day, Thelma and Louise was on. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those movies you can pick up anywhere and just start watching it. I was surprised how many people were in that. Yeah. I had forgotten that, like, Harvey Keitel was in it, and Christopher McDonald played Gina Davis's husband in it.
Oh, wow.
And all that. But, Brad Pitt comes in, and I'm like, damn, I think I'd have sex with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
In Thelma and Louise? That would be, if I could accomplish that.
Good looking fellow.
Yeah. Well,
isn't the thing in this movie, like, one of the brothers goes off to war?
They all go off to war.
Well, one of them stays because that's when he hooks up with Julie Ormond, who was married to whoever went off to war.
Oh, that's true. And then there's isn't there another girl that everybody sleeps with?
Yeah.
And
I saw this like somewhere in the last 3 or 4 years because, like Chris, I had never gotten around to seeing it and wondered what the fuss was about. There's no reason for the fuss.
No. I mean, it's a pretty movie. Everybody cries. Good looking people in it.
Everybody hurts.
Mm-hmm. Then we have Open Range. Kevin Costner again.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. I caught some of this recently, by the way.
Michael Jeter again.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is a good movie. I haven't seen it since it came out, though.
It's fantastic. And Annette Bening's in this. Mm-hmm. She plays basically the doctor's sister, and the doctor's out of town doing other stuff. So every time somebody in this movie gets injured, they're taken into Annette Bening's house, and she's like nursing them back to life. That's how basically she and Costner and Duvall start interacting. And it's basically Michael Gambon is the Gene Hackman of this Western town.
He has all the money.
He calls all the shots, and they don't want no goddamn free grazers. Now, I imagine this was probably a legitimate hot issue at certain areas back in this time, where if you had a town and you had a farm, you didn't want people kind of just randomly coming onto your hill and eating your grass and moving on with their cattle. But that was a thing. They were free grazers, people who move around, and that's what Duvall and Costner are. They have a crew. Big guy, don't remember his name. Adrian Benrubi?
I know. Yeah, Abraham Benrubi.
Yeah. And then they have a kid. Don't remember his name. Seen him in other stuff.
Is Abraham Benrubi the Parker Lewis can't lose guy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he didn't play Parker Lewis.
He played his friend, the big guy. Yeah.
Basically, a little bit of violence between the townsfolk and these free grazers leads quickly to a killing. There's so much awesome shit. There's a scene in the middle of this movie where it's pouring rain. The streets of this town are goddamn rivers. And Costner and Duvall stalk into town, and everyone is in this bar, including like all the evil people that hate them. And, oh, God, there's such great conversations. It's just a meaty-ass Western. And Duvall at his best, like grumpy, cranky, lovable dad Duvall. And then there's just a killer 20-30 minute shootout at the end that if you've seen 310 to Yuma,
mm-hmm.
you like that shootout at the end of that movie.
You should watch the shootout at the end of this.
This is a movie that's kind of lost to time, I think.
Could have done better, probably, had Costner been able to figure out how to do it after Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
Because by the time 2003 rolls around, his name isn't what it used to be.
Right.
And so he could come out with something badass like this, and nobody would see it. Nobody saw this movie. I saw it on a Thursday. This is another problem with how many movies I've seen over the years. Most of them are Thursday night.
Yeah.
I saw this. It's a long movie.
Yeah.
I saw this, and I really enjoyed it, but like it escaped my head immediately afterwards.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be that way because the movie's really good.
So far, that would be one of my strong recommends from this Montana batch.
I like me some Michael Gambon.
Well, he's especially good when he's evil.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was a great Dumbledore.
I thought he was too,
because he was kind of a little bit evil.
Yeah,
like he had a little darkness to him. But you could let him go full evil, he's gonna chew it.
The insider.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Then we have The Revenant. A recent entry into the Montana filmography.
And another movie that has gotten lost of time somehow in 3 years.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. You don't see this played anywhere. You don't see it on Netflix. You don't see it on Amazon. It may be on Amazon, but it's definitely not on Netflix or anything like that. Not highly promoted.
They
won a fucking Oscar. Okay, so how many Oscars did this win? Leo won.
A bunch.
It was nominated for Best Picture for Iñárritu. Yeah, I'm sure the cinematography
Iñárritu
was.
Won, but
he won as director,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but the movie did not.
I think it's going to, sadly, I think it's gone down in the public consciousness as that Leo Oscar movie.
Yeah.
When it was already kind of unfairly painted as that before it even came out.
No, there's so much going on in it. You've got Tom Hardy. You've got the fact that it was shot in all natural light.
Those tracking shots.
The tracking shots.
Are,
the sound.
I mean, people like to brag about the Children of Men tracking shots and one shots or apparent one shots, and they're awesome. But all that shit is done in The Revenant. Maybe even better a couple of times when he jumps off that fucking cliff.
Yeah.
And we go with him. Have you ever seen anything like that?
It's well, amazing. Until Mission Impossible did the that's as close as it gets.
And now it's just basically been reduced to that movie where Leo mumbled his way to an Oscar.
Yeah, and that's wild, man. Yeah, that beginning shot, that first shot, is a big old one shot.
It is.
Yeah. Where it goes through and it shows the attack and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah, it's a good movie, and yeah, I mean, who knows what, I don't know what, it's not a movie that people want, because the grizzly bear attack is one thing that people just, you know.
It's hard to watch.
It's hard to watch.
There's
that type
some stuff,
of stuff
in here that it's hard to watch, just in general.
And knowing that DiCaprio went through a lot of shit in real life to do this, you know, I mean, it's... So it won 3 Oscars, mm-hmm. DiCaprio and Iñárritu, and then the cinematography by Emmanuel Lubezki won.
Man, that's justifiable.
Yeah, justifiable. But it was Spotlight that beat it as far as Best Picture, and that's just, it's really strange to me. Spotlight's good, but I don't think it's Revenant good, you know?
Oh, really? I think I would vote for Spotlight.
Really?
Over
The Revenant?
And I love both of those movies, but I love me some Spotlight.
Do you think that Spotlight is a great movie or just a good story told well?
I think it's both. I think it's both. I think all of those performances work really well together. The accents are nailed. The characters are nailed. The doggedness of the reporters are nailed. Somebody found a way to use Rachel McAdams in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Keaton is a badass. Like it paints a portrait of this society of dogged reporters, mm-hmm. these Spotlight people that just will simply not give up. And Mark Ruffalo's coming in on like every single day and like, you got to take a day off. No, that kind of thing, obviously completely different.
They are
movie
different
than,
movies.
Than
you can't really compare, but like, I feel like cinematically, The Revenant walks all over the all
cinematically.
The
yes. Obviously dialogue in Spotlight is fantastic. I think the story and the scope of the story, even though it's a contained movie, I think moves me more than Hugh Glass trying to ultimately get to his kid or whatever.
Huge ass. all right. I can see that. You're wrong, but I see it.
Yeah.
It's just so disappointing from Barrett today. Like
Jane,
Spotlight.
You ignorant slut.
Who directed Spotlight?
That was Tom McCarthy.
Yeah, that's right.
Who
yeah.
was he's a longtime actor. He was on The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
He played that reporter who fudged the stories on The Wire.
Yeah.
And then he's directed a few other things. I think he might have been an actual reporter.
Hmm.
I think that's part of his. He might have been.
That makes sense.
I think he was an actual Baltimore reporter, and then he turned to movies.
Well, I mean, I know half of the like drug slinging characters on that show are like authentic Baltimore people. Like the female hitman who buys the nail gun. Like she was a real like gangster. Like,
oh,
for real. She's also dead now. But yeah, she was plucked off the. Never acted. She's just an actual real. Gangster.
Wow.
They did that a lot.
Not seeing him actually being a writer on IMDb, but I know that one of those guys was
it was
the chief, wasn't it?
Might have been the chief guy.
And he's also done a lot of acting too, but the guy who actually was like the boss who was telling everybody what they had to do but knew what they really should be doing.
Yeah.
That guy. Anyway, on to A River Runs Through It, another Robert Redford movie. This has Brad Pitt as well.
Yeah, Brad Pitt was into Montana in the 90s.
Yeah, man. I get two guys confused. They look exactly the same. Sasha Jensen from Dazed and Confused and this other guy who I think is in A River Runs Through It.
Craig Sheffer.
Yeah. Craig Sheffer.
Yeah, he looks like Sasha Jensen from Dazed and Confused,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And they both have these same kind of careers where they're like, there's times I have missed... I've misappropriated both of them, but
this is one of the first ones where Brad Pitt was really heavily featured and like as the sex symbol.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right? This was 92,
mm-hmm.
And girls my age were going fucking gaga over this guy.
Yeah, well,
that's why this movie was popular. Again, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I could easily confuse this movie and the last one we just talked about in Montana with Brad Pitt and Aidan Quinn that I can't remember. Legends of the Fall. Those two movies could be intertwined, and I wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
I don't know, man. I haven't seen Legends of the Fall. That's why I can't confuse the two. But I really like A River Runs Through It. I really like it. I mean, I think at times it can be just too slow, maybe.
But I haven't seen it in forever.
But I really enjoyed it because Brad Pitt's such a fuck up in this movie.
He is.
Mm-hmm. It does have long sessions of them fly fishing and
yes.
Shit. I really liked it.
Interesting.
Then there's Shooter. Is this is it Mark Wahlberg?
Yep. And then later, Ryan Phillippe on TV.
Yeah.
That show's on like its third or fourth fucking season.
Is it really?
Yes. Wow. Shooter also has Kate Mara in it.
That's right.
And
I remember something about Kate Mara being shot in a way because she plays the widow of Wahlberg's buddy that gets killed in combat. And of course they end up, you know, having a relationship later on. But there's some shot in there where it like lingers on her boobs. And I don't know if she like is wearing like a see-through shirt or something like that. But there's someone, one shot that I was like, I'm not like complaining, but it's also like, this is very, very obvious. Do we really need to be this obvious about it?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's Antoine Fuqua.
Antoine Fuqua did this?
Yep.
Boy, he's had a weird career. I saw this movie.
I actually kind of like this movie.
How did you guys pronounce that?
I said Antoine Fuqua.
It's Fuqua.
Yeah,
Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not. I was about to let that go, and then I was like, did I just hear Fuqua?
Yeah.
So he learns of a plot against the president, and then he has to go on the run. Is it because he's suspected, or is it because he knows it and the bad guys know it?
I know they set him suspect. Up. Yeah.
Yeah, they set him up.
Yeah.
He's the only person.
That's
that
the
knows
only way these movies go.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got to be the suspect.
Only one exactly. Man could have made that shot.
Exactly. Yeah. He knows about the Coriolis effect and all that bullshit. And so he's got to hide out in Montana. And his name? Bob Lee Swagger.
That's right.
Oh, Jesus.
That's right. That's God. Not made up.
I think Mark Wahlberg may be on an intentional like path to create as many mediocre films as possible. Like, you see this Mile 22 he's got coming up?
He's the weapon. He's the last resort.
This is like the most generic ass looking action movie I think I've ever seen advertised.
Yep.
And it's Peter Berg again.
Yeah.
This is like their fourth fucking movie together and they're all perfectly average. I've seen all of them. The Lone Survivor,
yeah.
The Deepwater Horizon, Patriot's Day, and this bullshit, Mile 22. It's going to be the same. And they're fucking misusing the dude from The Raid again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yes, he's going to be Peter Berg in that movie and not allowed to they're basically going to Force Awakens his ass.
I get the sense that Peter Berg has talent, but he just, I don't know, he doesn't use it to the fullest extent.
Maybe he's like the directing version of Eric Roberts, where he just likes to keep working.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really have a genre he cares about, doesn't really give a care if it's a B plus or an A plus. He just keeps churning.
He's got a little bit of a style and Very Bad Things, and he's got Friday Night Lights had his fingerprints all over. Even the TV show was played out like a Peter Berg. Yeah, it's very interesting. Oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. Kate, you just said that Wahlberg's name was Bob Lee Swagger in this. Mm-hmm. I can answer the Kate Mara thing. Her name is Sarah Sweet Titties. That's the reason why they. No, it's not.
That would have been awesome.
It's not.
Sarah Sweet Titties. Sarah See Through.
Oh, dear. Then we have Star Trek First Contact. I know Jeremy knows this movie.
I've seen it. Oh, like a big, happy, wet kiss.
Me too.
I love it. Now, I would argue almost half of this movie takes place in Montana. Because all the stuff on Earth is Montana. And that's where Cromwell is. And he's great as this drunk who never intended to make any kind of history. And it's got the Borg element, one of the best things the Next Generation ever added to Star Trek canon was the Borg. Mm-hmm. And they're used perfectly in this. There's time travel. We get Alfre Woodard in here to banter back and forth with Picard. We get that famous scene where he's like, the line must be drawn. But like right before that, Alfre Woodard has this great line where she's like, Jean-Luc, blow up the damn ship! Because he could win if he would just blow up the Enterprise, but he doesn't wanna because he's stubborn and he wants to beat the Borg with his brain or with a Picard thing and not just blowing up the ship. Everybody, this is William Frakes directed this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he had directed a bunch of...
Or is it Jonathan?
Jonathan Frakes. Yeah. Jonathan William Frakes. Jonathan Will Riker's his character.
It's his Christian name.
Jonathan Frakes directed this. He directed a lot of episodes of the show. All the actors play their roles great. Everybody's got a little something fun or interesting to do. Data gets that whole thing where he's kidnapped by... the actress we just talked about.
Alice Creek,
and gets like turned into a Borg, but surprise, he was faking.
He was faking the whole time, right?
Yeah. We get a spacewalk with Worf and Picard in spacesuits walking on the outside of the Enterprise. This just has everything I want.
This is the one where they do blow up the Enterprise, right? Because it's another one of those fucking movies. But they end up crash landing or something on a planet, don't they?
No, that's all the other ones.
Yeah, all the other ones.
This is the only one.
But they have to use a rocket that James Cromwell's built, right?
Yeah, but James Cromwell's the one that uses it. Geordi and Riker go on the trip with him because historically this was first contact.
Let's rock and roll!
Yeah, and you get that.
I like big names.
Exactly. Perfect use of that song.
Yeah, it's
and
awesome.
Of course, the Vulcans are out there watching. They see the first transwarp flight from Earth, and that's when they come down and make contact with Cromwell. And so the Federation, all of our Enterprise people, are trying to preserve that history because the Borg have come back in time to keep it from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So if first contact never happens, the Federation never exists, and they win by changing the past.
And this was another Star Trek that after a shitty Star Trek came out, they came. It's like that every even number Star Trek thing, because Generations was awful.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, Generations was right before this, and then this, and then, well, then everything falls to shit. No, Insurrection is somewhere in there.
Oh, no, what's after First? Nemesis was after First Contact.
Nemesis was the last one. So somewhere was Insurrection. That's F. Murray Abraham.
Uh-huh.
That's the one nobody wants to remember. It's even worse than Nemesis. At least with Nemesis, you can watch skinny Tom Hardy. But with Insurrection, there's nothing to nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, First Contact is great if you like Trek at all and you haven't seen it. I think it's probably one of the three or four best Trek movies.
Mm-hmm. So. I agree.
And then we have Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. I've seen this.
Have you seen this?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I was recommended it a few years ago, and I watched, and I was like, I don't like it as much as this person does.
Yeah.
But I like it.
It's interesting because it is a little bit more of a lighthearted Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm.
It's super hippie Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
In like a pretty early role, because this was, what, 74, 76?
Yeah, 74. And Michael Cimino directed it.
Oh, that's right. And George Kennedy is in it too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. He was in Cool Hand Luke. he's got this weird habit because he's kind of like competitor but friends with Thunderbolt and Lightfoot and with Clint Eastwood, and he keeps saying like, we're queer for each other, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, hey, we're going up there. Hey, you want to do that bank job? Well, we're sure are queer for that bank job, aren't we?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah. Isn't this, they're looking for something buried in a church pew or something like that? Is that what it is?
It's something like that, or it may be a bank. It's some valuable possession that they're trying to steal.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched this like a week ago. And even though the plot failed, Jeff Bridges suggests we should get the same crew together or a different crew together and do the exact same heist the exact same way. Because nobody's going to be expecting that.
It's hidden behind a school chalkboard. That's right.
Nobody would ever expect us to try and fail a second time.
Yeah, it's like a week later or something like that. Just because it was a Montana movie and I knew we were coming up on Montana, two likable leads,
yeah.
Michael Cimino, I was expecting a little bit more, and it's not.
Yeah. All right, now here's the rundown of some other stuff. Alice's Restaurant, this is not what spawned the TV. Well, that was Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. But is Alice's Restaurant a spinoff of Alice?
No, it's an Arlo Guthrie joint.
Okay.
Where he plays himself. We've already said too much about it. It's a hippie counterculture thing about trying not to get drafted into the war. It's Arlo Guthrie playing a version of himself with his father, Woody Guthrie, who obviously was not in the movie because he was dead.
Look, I'm going to say what everybody doesn't have the balls to say. Fuck Alice's Restaurant.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that is some controversial shit.
We're gonna have like at least no comments about that at all. Then there's Amazing Grace and Chuck.
I've seen it.
Tell us about it.
This is, okay, well, everything you need to know is that my father would let me watch this movie when I was young.
It's got a good cast.
Well, yeah, it's one of the Jesus-iest movies I've ever seen. The basketball player, his nickname is Amazing Grace. It's like Sweet Lou Dunbar or whatever. Like, and Chuck is the kid. Literally all I remember is that. The basketball, there's a lot of God.
I'll tell you why. Because they're trying to, the kid reads something about nuclear bombs. And he says he's not going to go to school anymore until all the bombs are destroyed. I was reading about this. And then Amazing Grace, the basketball player, says he's not going to play basketball anymore, even though he's one of the best basketball players in the world, until all the nukes are gone.
And they succeeded. The end.
Pretty much, because they get to all the way to the president of the United States, who is played by Gregory Peck.
Oh, I thought you were going to say our boy, you know, Bruce
Greenwood.
Oh, yeah. In 1987.
That would have been awesome.
No, I don't remember anything about this. I just remember, I think I was just old enough to know it was terrible and I hated it.
This is William Peterson a year after Manhunter.
Yep.
Son of a bitch.
He thought he was going to be the next thing, poor bastard.
Jamie Lee Curtis is in it?
Yeah.
Okay, then there's Bright Angel. No idea.
It's got a really good, an interesting cast. This is a 90s movie. It's from 1990. Dermot Mulroney, Lily Taylor, Sam Shepard, Bill Pullman, who I'll talk about later on, Delroy Lindo, and Will Patton.
Seen this. This is exactly the kind of movie I used to rent in college.
Just because of the cast?
Yes. Yeah. And when it came out. I've almost certainly seen it, but I don't remember anything about it.
And then there's a Marilyn Monroe movie called Bus Stop. I've never seen that. I've seen a lot of Marilyn Monroe, but I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I wonder how many movies she did.
It was about 40 or 50.
Yeah.
She did a lot. There was a point in time where she was not famous, and she like everybody else was a character actress. And all that. There's a movie I saw where she just kind of showed up for like 2 seconds and out the door. It's like, I was talking about the Alec Guinness, stuff that I saw. Audrey Hepburn shows up like for 1 minute in that movie, one of those movies, and then it's gone.
Wow.
It's amazing to see somebody with that kind of wattage coming in and then they're gone. And it's not even a cameo. It's just, you were a pretty girl that we put in the movie. Then there is Certain Women. Is Kristen Stewart in it?
Yeah, Kristen Stewart.
Somebody summarize.
It's Laura Dern, Kristen Stewart, Michelle Williams. It's like a anthology type of movie.
Yeah.
You've seen it though?
Yeah.
Any good?
I like Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, I do too. Even though our videos say otherwise. The Cowboys. I've never seen this. This is a John Wayne Slim Pickens movie. Then there's Cut Bank. No, it's an A24 movie.
Oh, I've seen this. This has got a Hemsworth in it, right?
Yeah, Liam. It's Liam Hemsworth, Billy Bob Thornton, John Malkovich, Teresa Palmer, Michael Stuhlbarg.
No. I am
Bruce Dern?
You, no.
Oh, you don't like it?
I'm saying no.
Okay.
Oh.
Bad movie.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I would not recommend it.
So okay. A24 does have a blemish then.
A24 has all kinds of goddamn blemishes, and I don't know why we don't ever talk about it.
I don't know. I think it's because at one point we said they were perfect. I'm pretty sure if we go back into our podcast, we've said that.
But don't they have like three Annabelle movies on their docket?
No.
There's some horror sequel they just put out. Pull up A24. Let's sort this out. We got time.
I was looking for this. Them and Blumhouse. I went looking the other day. Mm. They both have a handful of bad movies they've made.
Ghost Story, Comes at Night, The Vavitch, Ex Machina, Black Coats, Spring Breakers, Hereditary, Moonlight, Lady Bird.
Shut up. Click the button.
Green Room, I guess. Room, Killing of the Sacred Deer, Lobster, Swiss Army Man, Under the Skin.
Something.
Spectacular Now, Tusk? Did they put out Tusk?
I guess so.
Wow. A Prayer Before Dawn. Under the Silver Lake, American Honey, Bling Ring.
Maybe it's Blumhouse.
Yeah, you may be thinking about Blumhouse. Blumhouse has put out a lot of shit.
Yeah, Blumhouse definitely has a lot of blemishes.
I'm sorry I besmirched you, H.A.
Well, I mean, they obviously do have some blemishes, but it does seem like every time I see their name, I usually like the movie. I think...
they've got so many... They even did the end of the tour, that Jason Segel, David Foster Wallace movie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was wrong.
But I mean, they do have some. Yeah, it's perfect record. But
I think it was Blumhouse I was
anyway,
mad at.
You didn't like Cut Bank, though.
No, and I watched it specifically. Do I want to tell you why I watched it?
Yeah, do it.
I kind of had a little Miley Cyrus thing for a bit.
No, we all know that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Twitter knows that. And, okay. Yeah.
So I watched this because it was her boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, well, let's see if he's got any talent, because I didn't see it in that Catching Fire series. Yeah. And it's not very good. What they do is you rattle off a bunch of big names, and they're all in fairly small roles, and he's the main character. And it's just trying to be one of these... Well, I guess it's set in Montana. I was going to say, like, country, crime... Heist gone wrong, double cross kind of things. No, I say no. No to thee.
I say nay. Oliver Platt's in that, too.
Then we have Evel Knievel documentary. I don't know.
Okay.
There's an Evel Knievel documentary.
Evel Knievel was a big deal back in our day.
Yes,
he was.
That, you couldn't like walk anywhere without hearing about Evel Knievel.
To the point where he was like, wasn't Super Dave kind of like a parody of Evel Knievel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was always a thing where he was jumping over like, you know, a record amount of buses, which is what, you know, Hot Rod makes fun of and everything. But yeah, and then he had his son Robbie Knievel took over and started doing stuff, and I think he's gone now. Well, he's just doesn't do much anymore. Then there's The Hanging Tree. I think there's a few Hanging Trees. Which one is this? Is it 1959 Gary Cooper?
Yep. Gary Cooper, Carl Malden, George C. Scott.
I haven't seen this either. Man, sorry, Montana. I haven't seen most of your movies.
Make better movies though, also.
Horse Sense. Oh, that's got Joey and Andrew Lawrence in it, huh?
Oh!
Whoa!
Joey Lawrence.
Yeah.
Getting work for his relatives.
By the way, I hated just doing that whoa there because that's what he always fucking gets, but that's what he's known for.
Oh, man. He's going to be doing whoa at like state fairs for the next 20 years.
It's the whole reason Blossom had 14 seasons is because he goes, whoa!
Look at the dude who played Carlton on Fresh Prince and how much he's just embraced that's going to be his thing.
Yeah, man.
And he's turned it into a career now.
Yeah, he's doing America's
Funniest.
He's
hosting a game show. And
he does America's Funniest Home Videos.
Okay, and he's doing that commercial for Geico about parallel parking. Anyway.
Sorry to say that I haven't seen Little Big Man either. That's another classic movie, but I haven't seen it.
Little Big Man.
That's Dustin Hoffman.
He's like raised by a Native American tribe or something like that. And
whoa.
I don't know. 1970.
You said Little Big Man, and I immediately went to that Ed O'Neill, like, Pee Wee Football League movie.
It was Arthur Penn who did Bonnie and Clyde.
Did
that movie. And then there's The Missouri Breaks.
It'll be on Cinemax tonight.
Yes, it will.
We should just be honest. We've got this phenomenon going on. I'm sure it's that Bernie Madoff phenomenon or whatever it's called, Beiner Meinhof. You know that thing where
Bernie Madoff.
Where it's like the number 23, that movie is that.
Where you think it into existence or whatever.
Well, no, but you see, you notice a thing and then you feel like you notice it more in the following weeks when in reality you're just paying attention to it more. It's not appearing more, you're just noticing
right.
it more.
No, yeah, that was what I was talking about with Alison Tolman last week when you were like, I haven't seen her anywhere. And if you look at the movies that she's in, you're like, oh yeah, you've seen her a million wow. times.
So every week we record these usually on Thursday, and I'll go home and something within 2 to 4 hours of me getting home is prominently being played on a movie channel that we have discussed that day during the episode. It's happened like 5 weeks in a row now. Yeah. So
at least one thing. Sometimes it was like, because there was like the Eddie Murphy life and then the Jake Gyllenhaal life.
And they were
was
starting within 6 minutes of each other on different Starz channels. That blew my mind.
Another Arthur Penn movie called The Missouri Breaks has Jack Nicholson and Marlon Brando. I have not seen this either.
I want to see it, though.
It's one of those things, man. I'm a Westerns fan, but I am not that much of a Western fan where it's like I've seen every fucking thing in the world. And, I mean, that's one that I need to see.
I didn't even realize that there was a movie with Marlon Brando and Jack Nicholson in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It also has early Randy Quaid in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Which looks, you know, and sane Randy Quaid.
Yeah, yeah. Right, well, and then that was Randy Quaid and Jack Nicholson were in The Last Detail together.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It was a really good movie.
And this is apparently like Brando versus Nicholson.
Yeah.
In like Rustler versus like a hired hitman. I want to fucking see this movie.
Yeah.
It may not be good, but I'll has all of the pedigree.
I hear it's good. No, I've actually heard somebody recently say that, bring this movie up and say that it was good.
Hmm.
So yeah, I want to see it. I just never have. Yeah. Sorry, Montana. If you had The Last Detail, I could talk about that.
There you go.
Then there's The Patriot, which is a Steven Seagal movie, yeah. Not the Mel Gibson.
Not the Mel Gibson one. Oh,
I saw it
God.
On the list and I was like, did the fuck,
anybody,
man?
Anybody seen this?
No, but let me read it to you just real quick. So this is 1998. This is Steven Seagal.
He's definitely done at this point. He's over.
Yeah, he's way over the hill. He's already got the fat face and everything. Okay, so let me just read the first little bit of the plot here. Near the town of Ennis, Montana, local doctor and former government research immunologist Wesley McLaren, Steven Seagal, who has an interest in herbal medicine and is also a weapons and self-defense expert, is called to the hospital when people start dying from an unknown but very deadly disease.
Oh, my God.
So it's like Outbreak meets a Seagal movie.
But look at all the shit that Seagal is good with. Yeah. He's a local doctor. He's a former government research immunologist. He's got an interest in herbal medicine, and he's also a weapons and self-defense expert.
He's a true patriot.
Yes, he is. God damn it. Mm-hmm. By the way, herbal medicine just means he smokes weed.
It's just like he looked at like the character traits, like the Jumanji thing, where it's like bravery or like bags. He's like, no, I want him to be not only a doctor, so he's super smart, but he's also a weapons expert.
I love Kevin Hart in that scene. How is strength my weakness?
And then finally we have Vampire Academy, which has Zoe Jesus. Deutsch in it. I've never seen it.
No, I've never seen it either.
But if you were gonna build a Vampire Academy, you would do it in Montana.
Yes, yep. That's where, I mean, for sure.
And that just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you don't want people like, you know, sneaking up on you and shit.
It's got Olga Kurylenko in it and Gabriel
like
Byrne.
I like Olga Kurylenko.
Lucy Fry. I
don't know. Olga Kurylenko, she was in the Hitman movie.
Yeah, she was also in Oblivion. Tom Cruise's real wife.
Bolivian?
Bolivian, yes. Bolivian.
I'm going to knock him into Bolivia.
Yes. So there's Montana. Sorry, I haven't seen very many of these Montana movies. Jeremy saw most of them, I think.
Yeah.
You mean I saw more than you guys had, but I still probably didn't see even half of that list.
Yeah.
I mean, get going. I know it's a very unpopulous state, but it's Wyoming, I think, that has the least population, right?
Like, when we went up there, I was taken aback by how, like, anti-corporate, like, anti-brand they seem to be. There's still chains there. Like, there's McDonald's there, but, like, there were, like, five City Brew coffees and one Starbucks.
Oh, nice.
And I was told by more than one local, we don't drink Starbucks. The only reason that Starbucks is here is for people like you who come in from out of town. I was like, well, okay.
People like you.
But of all the brands to hate, Starbucks is a little weird when you got a Cabela's right down the road and like, you know, a Fazoli's. Like,
oh my God. I used to have, there was a manager I had at Hollywood 27. You never had this manager. Who loved going to fucking Fazoli's, man.
Oh,
holy
man.
Shit. But, like, like the break that everybody knows is coming would be coming up, and he'd be like, anybody want Fazoli's? And they're like, God damn it, man. Fazoli's every fucking day with this guy.
I loved Fazoli's when I was a kid. I would probably venture to guess that if I ate it today, I would like vomit.
Well, and here's the thing. I haven't been in ages, but like in 98, when I had nothing, I had no money and no job, like Fazoli's saved my fucking life.
Because
I go in there and buy a 99-cent salad and a water, fill up on those breadsticks.
Yeah, the breadsticks were amazing.
And I never felt like I was taking advantage because they always advertised free unlimited breadsticks. Free unlimited, but you better bring that shit.
They probably had the most obnoxious radio commercials of all time, too, because they had kids, but I didn't know if they were really kids on the audio. Like, it was one of those where the kid's voice sounds just unreal. Like, if you have a hungry mouth, put some Fazoli's in it. And every time that commercial would come on, I would turn the volume down to zero. And it's like, it's one of those, is there anything lower than mute for this? Because it's fucking unbelievable. God damn it. That's my rant. Fazoli's commercials back in the 90s. You remember them well. They were awful.
They're the worst.
I have no rant, but we're going to get into some rants.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I'm as mad as hell.
You've never seen me very upset.
Yeah.
That's the end of our road trip
for today.
You want to do your rant? You want me to?
No, we're going to stop in Montana. That's it. It's over.
I would like to have stopped in Montana. All right, so here's my rant. Several weeks ago, about end of June, I saw an article that said one internet user's persistence has paid off and he's been begging Planters to bring back their cheese ball snack from the 80s and 90s. It was in like a Pringles style tube, only twice as fat.
Yep.
And they were cheese balls and they were awesome. And I ate them a lot and they stopped making them a long time ago. And I was like, they're bringing them back. Holy shit. And it was like limited time. They'll be available in a couple weeks. Here are the places you can buy them. Amazon was listed. I immediately, that article could not have been more than an hour old. I clicked through to Amazon and I bought two cases. That would have been, I think, a total of 12 tubes of cheese balls.
Oh,
yes.
My God.
Yes, I overdid it.
this is your Szechuan sauce.
It is. Well, it is. Yes, it is. Because the next day I got an email saying I would receive them on the 15th of July. And I was like, all right, well, you announced that a little soon because now I have to wait 3 weeks for them, 2 weeks, whatever. But okay. Then, like a week before they were supposed to show up, your shipment has been delayed. No new date given. And that was the case for 3 weeks. And then, just 2 days ago, I got an email with an updated shipment. December.
What?
Listen, Planters, I do not fucking care about your goddamn cheese balls that much. And how did you watch the Szechuan sauce debacle happen and then not make enough cheese balls to meet them? Why did you not put out feelers? Why didn't you conduct a Gallup poll to figure out exactly how many motherfuckers like me were going to buy two cases of cheese balls? And now I'm one of the first to tried. I've already paid for them. I'm not going to get them shits till December. And I bet you anything, in December I get an email saying, oh, they've been discontinued. We refunded your account. I probably am not going to get any of these fucking things. And someone out there is listening to this thing, just munching on that shit, and I'm angry. God damn, I'm angry.
When I was at the beach, I was compelled, because I went to a Walmart for the first time in, I don't remember the last time I went to a Walmart, and they had one of those giant plastic Utz things.
Oh, I saw you tweeted about this.
And I immediately regretted the decision because nobody else in my family eats these things. So I've still got a giant ball. No, it's about a third empty. I made a good dent into it. But yeah, that's a lot of cheese balls, man. And they're hopelessly addicting, man. I like ground it up and put it into my eggs in the morning.
Well, and I missed them from my youth. But for a few years there after I got married, the Kroger brand cheese balls were very similar to what the old Planters ones had been, and then they changed their fucking recipe.
Okay, that's where, yeah, exactly, because that's the problem with this bucket of cheese balls is that they're immediately stale. I'll tell you why they're immediately stale. Because
they changed the recipe.
Because they changed their recipe, and the Planters ones had that foil, like, fucking, like,
exactly,
tennis ball ripoff thing.
Exactly.
Where you'd hear the air escaping, and you know this shit is, like, vacuum sealed.
Oh, yeah.
We have talked more about cheese balls than I expected.
By the way, you brought up grocery stores. I can make a mini rant about that,
I like
by
to
the
hear
way. Because I know that you managed grocery stores at one time.
A Kroger, in fact.
And I go to a Publix that is really the only store, really the only option of going to any grocery store that I go to. But it doesn't matter what day I go. I understand that grocery stores, they need to have this illusion that they're always stocked.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, not an illusion. They are always stocked. Yep. Because it looks better to the customer and, you know, and all that type of thing. I understand the psychology of it, but I hate every single one of you fucking stalkers. I fucking hate every single fucking one of you motherfuckers. Go fuck yourselves.
The stalkers, the stalkers are one. And then you have all these people that are doing the buying for those lazy ass shits that order online.
Yes.
And they've got these huge fucking carts that they sit there in inevitably right where you want to go. Set those motherfuckers right there.
Yeah. And this Publix that I go to, they are real fucking assholes about it too.
They are real fucking assholes.
Like you're pushing a cart down the thing and they're like they like barely acknowledge you. Or they'll say, hi, how's it going? And I always want to say, be fine if you get the fuck out of my way.
I gotta stand up for the stalkers in America. That job sucks ass, man.
No kidding.
And
but you know
I'm
what?
Sure if they weren't beaten down, they would get out of your way more. I totally know what you mean. They
you know what,
always
though?
In the way.
It's already bad enough that you have to deal with the other customers in the fucking store. Those guys are terrible too. But like, you know, you have the people who are like, you know, they decide to take their cart down the exact middle of the lane. And,
God, those people are the worst.
And they never get over and they hear you coming and all this other stuff. And they stop in front of you and look at their like, you know, the Charmin and shit. And like it's then but then you go, you know, to the like. I know grocery stores got to have fucking an aisle or a display for everything. Mm-hmm. There's not enough room to do any of this shit. And you go, and it's even worse in New York. I know the
Chicago's
you
know, terrible
those
too.
Those grocery stores are awful, but like you go, you're just pushing your cart along and everything. And then boom, out of the doors, like somebody's coming and it's like all these fucking pallets of shit. And they're like, they didn't even look. They didn't look both ways. It's like driving, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
All right,
you feel better.
Yeah, I do feel better.
Oh man!
All right. Well, I was incensed, as people are incensed on Twitter. There was a post for The Ringer, and I think the guy was supposed to be saying wink, winking it. But it was a post about Josh Hartnett, your buddy Josh Hartnett.
Oh yeah,
your
Josh
boy,
Hart.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. It was subtitled. It was like on the 20th anniversary of Halloween H2O. We examine the career of Josh Hartnett.
Mm-hmm. That's something worth a lot of time for.
Look, I probably have been guilty about, like, you know, thinking about, like, anniversaries. Like, we saw Smashing Pumpkins recently. It's the 25th anniversary of Siamese Dream or whatever it is. And, you know, hey, man, it's been 20 years since this came out or that kind of, you know, I'd go back and look at it and that kind of thing. But we are awash with this now.
Oh, God, every day.
And it for stupid shit, too. It's like the Pitchfork did a fucking... a re-examination of Hole's Live Through This, the album, and they did it on their long form thing, those big Sunday reads and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, Hole was fine. That album was fine. It was weird that it was released right after Kurt Cobain died. But it doesn't need that many words. And they were talking about it like it was the fucking Miles Davis's Kind of Blue or something like that.
They gave it an unheard of like 9 point something or whatever, too.
It was ridiculous. I actually have, hang on, 2 seconds. I'll pull it up. They gave it a 10.
Yeah, they gave it a 10.
They
God
gave
damn.
Hole's Live Through the fucking Pitchfork.
If Hole had come out with that album today, Pitchfork would give it a 5.8. Probably.
If that.
Is that the one with Miss World on it?
It's the one with Doll Parts on it. I don't know.
But the one where it's one. Not melodic and she's just groaning, right?
Yes.
Until the Celebrity Skin album, she's not doing anything melodic.
Nope.
Yeah, it's garbage.
I wouldn't say it's garbage there's a song called Violet, there's a song called Doll Parts. There's some good stuff in there. It ain't a goddamn 10, though.
What's good? It's none of it's good. It's all garbage.
But when we're getting to the point where we're like saying, you know what? Let's go back and look at, let's use the 20th anniversary of Halloween H2O
yeah.
as the impetus not for a
worthy,
our thing.
Not a worthy thing.
Well, even... I don't want to get dragged for this, but even Seth Rogen, like yesterday or the day before, was celebrating the 20th anniversary of... Some anniversary of Pineapple Express. 10 years, maybe?
Must be 10 years.
Yeah, it'd be 10.
With a bunch of facts, behind-the-scenes facts.
Mm-hmm.
And it, some of them were fun. Like
where they had to roll
had
all
to
the
roll
joints.
He had to roll all the cross joints because no one else could do it right. Oh. And he ended up rolling like 20 of them for the production. So, I mean, it's neat, but that's like DVD extras stuff.
Yep.
That's not like the anniversary of Pineapple Express? God damn, what's next? Like the half-year anniversary of when My Dog Skip was released?
Yeah.
Like, we're getting into thin territory. I understand... Like
it's
when
just
we,
clicks.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the same reason the Rap writes about every goddamn Jim Carrey painting. People are going to click on it.
Yeah,
people see anniversary, a movie they remember. What do they have to say? But you don't have to put any
nostalgia.
Effort into that shit.
Hey, people remember Halloween H2O.
Exactly.
Do they? Do they remember?
I hope they don't.
Halloween H2O. That was a
pretty bad movie.
Epically garbage movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like. And it ended Halloween for a while,
yep.
So much so that Rob Zombie came back with it. That's how bad H2O was. And now it's got, I guess it's got a cult following, because I do hear H2O a lot lately.
God, that's a shitty movie, though.
It is a shitty movie. It's so bad.
I don't know. When you get to the point where you're retrospectively giving Holes Live Through This a 10, and when you're talking about Halloween H2O on the week of its release 20 years ago, fuck yourself, man.
Mm-hmm.
Get off. Get away.
Get fucked.
Yeah. Nostalgia, man. It does all kinds of strange stuff to us where we retroactively, you see it a lot with presidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember when George W. Bush was in office?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone hated that guy and he was a dunce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been like 15 years and history has already begun to shine him up.
Yeah.
And maybe it's in comparison to others that have come since him.
I think that was starting even before the election cycle.
Yeah, no, I just think what my point is that every president goes through. History remembers every president as being a little bit better than we remembered thinking at the time.
Yeah, I mean, look at when Nixon died, the funeral was you know, covered like he was, you know, this glowing yep. figure and stuff yep. like that. And it was like, you know. I mean, I know it's shitty to say things about people who are dead, but he did some really shitty shit.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Shady shit.
Oh, yeah.
Shady,
all right.
Shady shit.
So on to some news.
News on the mark.
You got to start off the news because I want to hear your opinions about this.
Okay, oh, I got some.
So, and this is actually, it's one of those things that came out and like immediately there were like 3 Facebook comments that were like, yeah, talk about this Oscar news. So the Oscars are going to have a new category called Best Popular Film or something. Or
I don't even know if they've officially named it.
Something
yet.
Of that nature.
Yes.
And they're also going to make the telecast a straight up 3 hours by doing some awards during commercial breaks and then like sort of editing them together, kind of like how they do with the technical awards or whatever. These are technical awards, but something that now that part I've always thought they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
Now the problem is they've bloated every telecast with a whole bunch of stupid ass skits and just stuff that meanders.
Opening monologue.
Open monologue. Yeah. I mean, it's like so many different things that, you know, make that telecast so long. And they're like, well, where can we find cuts? Oh, I know. Let's do actual awards. That's no, nobody tuned in for your skit. Nobody cares. You know, they tuned in to see who won.
Well, and I've always thought it was kind of tragic. Don't get me wrong. Don't take this the wrong way. That the songs kind of get to be performed mostly in full, or at least 2/3 of in full, and like the performances, you get like a 1-sentence blurb of what Meryl Streep yelled, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're celebrating the whole of the movie, but when it comes to what we show before announcing the winner, we're giving the music like way more time than we're giving like the acting or the directing or the effects. They only get like a 3-second little blip.
Yeah, and it's always the most emotional, basically, right?
Yeah.
You got to be crying. Or you got to have some sort of celebratory moment or something like that. 9 times out of 10, it's crying.
Yeah.
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 But
yelling. or yelling.
I think the thing that that got most people sort of in an uproar is this best popular film or whatever they're going to call it thing. Yeah, again, and in this memo that went out to the Academy said, we'll figure out the criteria for this later on.
Later.
More details are forthcoming.
Yeah, what exactly any criteria that you come up with for this is going to be stupid.
Yep.
If it's popular, that means it made money. So it's going to be movies that made money. I think you wrote on your you wrote on Twitter something about why don't they're becoming handing out Moon Men now.
Yeah.
And it's exactly right. That's MTV Awards.
Yep.
That's when, you know, oh, everybody knows this movie, so we'll give it an award for being a movie that everybody liked.
I don't even know how this would happen, because I've seen a million think pieces. Like, as soon as this came out.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it released on Hollywood Reporter on Twitter at maybe 5 minutes afterwards and emailed you guys. And I was thinking, like, well, that's interesting. I love the idea of paring down the runtime.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of putting it earlier in the year too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about this popular film thing, like outstanding achievement in popular film. Like, how would that even look?
So then,
and all these think pieces are saying, well, I know what this is going to look like, and this is stupid, or I think this is a great idea because this is exactly what it's going to be. Based on this press release, we have no idea what it's going to be.
Yeah, well, it could also be one of those things where they introduce it, and then they read the think pieces, and then they're like, let's try to avoid all those things that are so negative about it. But it's going to, I mean, in the end, it's going to be top five movies that made money that maybe weren't nominated for anything else.
Yeah.
What a shitty category. If that's what it ultimately is.
There's some really interesting stuff, though. Like, Dan Merle from Screen Junkies was tweeting out, and he was talking about Blade Runner 2049. And he was like, it got great critical reception. And almost no one went to see it. But of those who went to see it, most really, really liked it. So is it popular? Is it popular? It's certainly popular among those that saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it popular versus the population? No, but again, the point is how do you define this, and however you define it is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you right now, if they institute this award and they give the first one ever to Black Panther, that is going to be the most racist shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is
bunch of old white people awarding the most popular movie
we're not gonna,
to Black Panther.
Yeah, we're not going to, and obviously they haven't announced it yet. We're only in the middle of the year. It's very unlikely it's going to be nominated for Best Picture, right?
Even though I think there are those that suggest it should be.
I would maybe be
so
on
So you're saying it's sort of their out because they won't nominate it as a Best Picture?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I agree with you.
Suspicions that this whole award was created as a way to recognize Black Panther.
I think I might agree with you.
I might too,
this.
And that's why I said I responded to a comment on Reddit, and I was like, this just shows that how out of touch they still are. Like, they haven't learned anything about that from the Oscars So White. They haven't learned anything from
Well, they also, the, you know, the other thing that came out of this was that the idea that they started coming out with Best Animated Film was another reason why they started doing this, was so that they could get some movies that people knew. That is also the reason why they expanded the number of best pictures that could be in there, because The Dark Knight didn't get a nomination back in 2008. So they've been trying to expand the whole popular film thing. I wouldn't say that I'm suspicious of this award because of Black Panther. I think it's more about they see ratings declining and everything.
Sure.
And they want to have movies like Black Panther that were popular with everybody to have a chance. But I don't, that to me shows their disconnect between what is, like, this movie should have critical acclaim, like an Oscar nomination. I think they feel like they sully their name in some way by putting popular entertainment into the category.
Mm-hmm.
And of course there have been throughout the years popular movies that have made it into the Best Picture category, but more and more it seems like it's been those real small pictures that very few people have seen and everything. I think last year was a case in point.
Yeah. And I understand the conflict there. I do understand that. But I think if you go by the spirit of the criteria, which we have a sense of, we don't know exactly, you could put a Black Panther versus a Ladybird or something like that. I know that was from last year, but you can put them up to each other and compare them, mm-hmm. because every story is going to be completely different. Everything is going to be, you know, a slightly different take on things, and it doesn't matter what it looks like. If it's well executed, if it's well produced, it should be valued the same as an indie, an A24 film.
Yeah, and it's what's weird for me is that, because, I mean, we're kind of talking about, like, snobbery here a little bit, aren't we? Like, we're fine art. We give the best picture to art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Avengers Infinity War isn't fine art. It's populist art, mm-hmm. or what have you. And so we want the money from the populist viewers because we want them to watch our broadcast and we can charge advertisers more. But we don't want to actually call any of those films good art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's sort of an elitism they haven't gotten in the past yet.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be, though. You're going to have Black Panther and Infinity War, at least. Those are two that have to be in that category.
Yep.
Star Wars. This year, but
yeah, probably not that one. But they'll. I mean, it'll be movies like. I mean,
it'll be Mission Impossible.
See, it opens up the possibility that Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom would be in this.
True,
because
it made a shit ton of money.
And God, man, can anybody discern a movie that makes a ton of money that nobody likes anymore? Like, can people actually discern that? Who's actually going around espousing Fallen Kingdom as a great movie? It made $400 million.
Yeah, we just
and
like
that's probably
dinosaurs.
All because families went to go see it and they're, you know, it was all right.
Yeah,
they don't have any other you know, say in this whole thing. But
I also think a fair response to this new category, I've seen both Dicer and Jesse Moulton talking about this, is that if you're going to introduce a new category, there are way better ones you could have chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Jesse is championing the casting director,
mm-hmm.
which is a great one. And Dicer had a list of five, and almost all of them were great, in my opinion. I don't remember the one that I was like, I don't know about that. But he had stunt performance, motion capture performance, casting director, and again, I think those kind of things would draw in the viewers you're trying to draw in with most popular movie.
Yes.
I think the average movie fan would be more inclined to watch an Oscar telecast if you told them there was going to be some kind of stunt award or montage or on-stage recreation of a stunt or something, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just you're learning all the wrong lessons.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if they did finally create a stunt category? And Tom Cruise won it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's the way to get that category made.
Can you imagine all the stuntmen that have like been injured and risked their life?
God.
But are you fucking kidding me? But that's why I think stunts have more prominence now, and would appeal to fans, is that Cruise has, in a way that only an A-list movie star could, has been able to show you exactly how much effort goes behind this kind of stuff. And because he's an actor and not a stuntman, we treat him like Jesus, but stunt men and women are doing this kind of thing mm-hmm. every single day, and they just get pooped on in favor of most popular movie and best kiss.
Yeah. Ultimately, shortening the broadcast, I'm for it. Mm-hmm. The new category, I'm again it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, all those technical awards and everything, I know that it's fun for them to have their moment and everything, and I don't want to take that away from them or anything. It's just that there's only you and your family care, really.
Yep.
And sorry to say, you know, most of the time, like the millions of people who are watching, they don't know who did the sound effects editing.
Well, editing and sound mixing being two separate categories that are, you know, introduced and then, you know, have all the montage beforehand, drags the fucking broadcast down.
Yeah.
I appreciate sound. I appreciate the stuff that goes into this stuff, but it's a technical award. Put it in the technical awards mm-hmm. or do it during the commercials, stuff like that.
So yeah.
I think it's totally fair for them to say, what can we do to get more viewers to the broadcast? That's and like you said, shortening the broadcast is one almost surefire way to do it. However you get there, it's just that you don't need to make up new categories. And if you're going to make good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of ball lickers.
Yeah.
Bunch of ball washing bastards. I was going to talk about Robert Redford retiring or Kathleen Turner's incredible fucking interview.
I need to read that, by the way.
She's just burning all the bridges. She does not give a damn. It's awesome. But when we were talking earlier about the grocery store stuff, it made me think of a news item I read this morning. And it concerns Oreo cookies and Hydrox cookies.
And what cookies?
Hydrox. Hydrox is a black and white sandwich cookie that actually came before Oreo by like 6 years, I believe. But Oreo was better marketed and has long since been
the
dominant player.
Aren't they one of the classic cases of a company coming in and stealing an idea?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. I didn't read any of that.
There's a few of those over the years where, like, you know, somebody had the had a game or a food or something like that, and then some other company came in. I like what you're doing here, and they just slapped their own shit on it, and it became more popular.
Yeah, and so. Hydrox has always been number two, a distant number two, and in like 2003, they even stopped making them until another company came along, bought it, and revived the brand in like 2015. Today, they're filing suit against Oreo, and it's just fucking fascinating to me what they're alleging. Now, the first thing that I learned in grocery store management training was what DSD stood for, and it means direct store delivery. You ever wonder why the Pepsi and Dorito displays always look awesome? Or there's almost always somebody working on them. Those are DSD products. Those are, excuse me, direct store delivery. Pepsi delivers their own Pepsi to the store and arranges it on the shelf.
A Pepsi employee does, or a subsidiary.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They still check in at the back dock, whereas 90% of what the store is selling is coming from the warehouse, the Kroger warehouse, and it comes into the back dock, and the employees have to unpack the truck and put it all
and
where
piss off Chris.
Yeah, and piss off Chris. Direct store delivery, and it's usually soft drinks, alcohol, and snacks. They come in and stock their own. They're in there every day. They know what the volumes are like. But the store employees aren't checking inventory for Doritos or Pepsi. That's all on Doritos and Pepsi's employee. And Oreo is delivered direct store delivery. Hydrox is delivered through warehouse delivery. And they are alleging that the DSD delivery people who work for Oreo are intentionally hiding Hydrox behind other cookies on the shelf.
Oh.
And they have gobs of pictures.
Wow.
Because Hydrox is not sending an employee in every day, but Oreo is. They have the advantage if they wanted to. Nobody who works for the store is going to look twice at the Oreo guy to see if he's like hiding Hydrox behind.
Nope.
But like in some places, they've hidden them behind like Kroger brand or hidden them behind Oreo brand.
Oh, wow.
And they're bringing a lawsuit because they're basically going under from lack of sales, and they think this has something to do with it. And I just think that's fucking movie worthy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
man.
I just saw the thing with the McDonald's Monopoly, that big story that broke where the guy who
that was awesome.
And Ben Affleck is going to direct. They bought the rights. Affleck's going to direct, and Damon's going to star in the movie, and I'm geeked out about it. But they should be buying this fucking Hydrox lawsuit against Oreo. If you can imagine, like, the kinds of conspiracy meetings and conversations that would have to take place to make that happen.
Yeah.
And then the conversations you would have at Hydrox, like, is it possible that they're just hiding? No, that's ridiculous. Well, we better go look at a store. And oh my God, I just think it's a fascinating story. I'm going to be watching it like crazy.
Yeah, it's like your informant or flash of genius type of story or whatever. Or it's those are always fun.
Yeah, I would watch the shit out of a movie version of that. Anyway, I thought that was fascinating. I had a little bit of insider knowledge. I thought that would be my news item for the
week. What is Flash of Genius?
That's the Greg Kinnear movie where he invents the intermittent wiper blade. And it's about the real guy who did that and how he had this idea and he, you know, sat on it for a while and then he tried to sell it to the car companies and he had it all set up where he showed it in action, showing the intermittent wiper blade and everything. And all these engineers are sitting there taking notes and all sort of type of stuff. And so, like, he made sure that nobody could steal his shit. So finally, he had a sort of a handshake deal with, like, Ford or somebody like that. You're going to put all your wipers, all these, my invention into your car or whatever. And so, like, as he started sharing information, they pulled out of the agreement and took the idea. And so, like, it's about him basically going through years of litigation over all this.
Wow.
And who has the idea and all that. I don't think the IMDb has this as a really high up movie, but I've seen this a couple of times and it's good. I really like it.
It sounds like the real world is just full of this kind of shit.
Yeah.
Because like Google has sued Uber because the guy that was working on Google's self-driving car technology left the company and went to work for Uber and apparently took some documents. Mm-hmm. And it's just that kind of shit is fascinating to me.
I know.
I am already in on this Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, McDonald's Monopoly.
Oh, that's got so many levels. Why don't we start it's gonna be so good.
With all your research, we should write a spec script for the for
send
the cookie wars.
Oh, for the cookie wars?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
might as well.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. They're probably already circling the lawyers and buying up the rights as we speak, but why not?
Let's move on to recommends and warns.
Totes amazeballs.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
All right, so I'm going to recommend Eighth Grade.
I really want to see this.
Me too.
It is as fantastic as advertised. I think the reason why I like Eighth Grade so much and the main actress in there, and I can't think of her name right now. She's really good, but it seems like Bo Burnham, I don't know if he told her, here's basically what I want you to say, and then you go and say it without memorizing it. But a lot of the starts and stops and everything that's in the speech, I'm not all the way there confident about what I'm saying. It's really endearing. I don't know what it is. It can be kind of annoying, but it's so true to life. She has this YouTube channel, which, you know, it gets like one or two people to watch it like every once in a while. And it's probably like not, it's either family members. I think that's what it's sort of implying. It's like her dad or something is the only one who watches it. But you see her, like, she's all made up and she's got the lights and everything. And she's has these, basically like these self-help videos where she's like, so, you know, a lot of times when you know you're not confident, what you need to do is and just like a whole bunch of like ums and like and likes and you know, and all that, and it's just it's a coming of age. I mean, there's no real like main story to it. It's just her trying to fit in the world and everything, and she's trying to fit in with the popular kids. The popular kids are very indifferent to her. But there's a great scene in there. I don't want to spoil it, but there's a great scene in there where like she gets like this big moment for her, and it's really just for her. I mean, it's hard to describe without describing the actual scene, but there's a scene where the people were actually clapping in the audience, but it was like, it's almost a hollow victory if you look at it, but it was one of those things like, yeah, that would be very big for her to get to do that. There's a scene in there that's going to creep you the fuck out in it too. Handled very well. It's really, really well done. I enjoyed the fuck out of that movie. Oh,
I can't wait to see this movie. I know it's at the Belcourt in our boutique theater. If it were anywhere nearer to me, I probably would have pulled the trigger.
I think it's expanding.
Is it? I hope so.
And also, I read, because it's rated R, that Burnham himself has organized free screenings in all 50 states.
Yep. Yeah, I saw that.
For people to skirt the rating R rating and see it.
And I saw him, I mean, I heard him on Marin talking about this. And he was like, I have no idea why this was R-rated. Well, you know, there's three F-bombs in this, which is usually the limit, although there are some exceptions. You'll see stuff like All the President's Men and everything has like 7 or 8 or whatever, but it's because it's such an important story. They kept it PG. But yeah, it's very arbitrary. I mean, you know, it's this idea that 14-year-olds don't have that vocabulary.
That's so stupid.
And it's kind of dumb. And there's nothing else in it other than that kind of talk that's going on in it. There's a scene in there that's really funny though. She likes this one dude. He's the dreamboat of the great or whatever. And there's all this music that accompanies it. It's so funny when she's like in her like trance looking at him and everything. And he's such a dumbass. And there's a part in there, where they have these drills where they're, you know, it's like if a terrorist comes in or a guy or they have these drills about like gunmen coming into the school. And they're all hiding under their desks and everything. And she like finds this opportunity to go over to his desk and talk to him. And he's like, hey, what's up? And she goes, she's like, it's kind of crazy, huh? This whole thing and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, would you ever be worried if somebody like that came in here? And he's like, no. And why wouldn't you be worried about that? And he goes, 'cause I'd fuck them up. Yeah, it's
I
really
see
well
this so bad.
My Rekha Warren, Modern Horrors had a review of this movie a few years ago, and I finally got around to seeing it. It's called Wolf Cop.
Oh yeah.
Right up Jeremy's alley.
Sounds like it.
I don't, yeah, this is the exact, this is exactly a Rekha Warren. Like there's, I mean, it's so short and so to the point that why not, right? It's an hour and 20 minutes or something like that. But yeah, it's a guy who is a terrible alcoholic cop, and he gets abducted by these cult, the satanic cult or whatever. And then he's he just turns into a werewolf whenever night falls, and he actually at one point they're like one of his friends is like he's gonna like stop some bank robbery or something, and the guy's like, you can't do that, you're a wolf, and he's like, cop. And it's one of those movies, they made it with this whole like it's tongue in cheek, it's all fun and games and everything, but. There are parts of that movie I'm just like, you're a little bit too lackadaisical for just, I mean, satanic cult, lunar eclipse, all this other bullshit, you know, I could do without, but very easy, breezy, stupid, fun type of movie.
Wolf right. copy.
Very right. wolf copy. And there's another one that I haven't seen yet called Another Wolf Cop. What's funny is at the end of Wolf Cop, there's a thing that says Wolf Cop 2 coming out in 2015. It ended up being 2017, and it was called Another Wolf Cop.
Nice.
Which
nice.
I'll have to see at some point. Yeah, there you go.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know if it's on Netflix. I have the Blu-ray. When I went through my you know, usual Blu-ray buying or whatever at Best Buy, I saw The Wolf Pack. It's got two movies, Wolf Cop and Another Wolf Cop in it.
Oh, my God.
So I bought
it. They have this at Best Buy?
They did. So
that's
I bought
awesome.
It. I don't wow. know if it's I don't know if it's on Netflix or not. I bet you can find it, though.
I could borrow it from you.
You could
I can tell
do
you
that
this.
Too.
OG recommend Lock is now on Netflix, apparently.
Ooh, I know.
It's been an uptick the last couple of days of people on Twitter telling me it was and that they watched it. One guy said, I stopped another movie I was in the middle of watching when I found out that Locke was on Netflix. And I had to watch
Locke. I popped that in as background the other day.
It's so good.
It's a great background.
It really so is. Good. I've watched the movie Doubt like 3 times in the last week just as background.
Really?
I love it. I love it.
It is very, very
And I'm
going
to reference it here in a minute. But my recommend this week is a documentary I'd never heard of until 2 days ago called Surfwise. A lot of what happens, I've told you before, generally if I'm in my office, but TV is on. If it's not Friends reruns or Seinfeld reruns, it's one of the movie channels. And if everything playing is something I've seen a lot or don't like, I will gravitate towards just a new title, something I've not ever seen. And this was playing on IND Network, Independent Film Network or something. I don't know. IFC, something like that. And it said a documentary. And I was like, well, that's right up my alley. but it said something in the description about an alternative parenting style. And I know that my wife is super into different ways of thinking, different cultures. Like she's read Mayim Bialik's book, The Girl from Big Bang Theory, mm-hmm. and Blossom, who has done some alternative parenting methods. Like she does a method called, what's it called? It's basically her kids sleep with her in the same bed, and she's all constantly holding or cuddling them. It's it patterned after the way gorillas behave, from what I understand. Anyway, knowing my wife is into this kind of stuff, I thought, well, I'll watch a few minutes. And then I got hooked. So basically, it's in like the 60s. This guy had been a doctor, decided he was just burnt out. I'm going to live on the beach in a camper like a hippie. Only I'm going to have like a shit ton of kids, and I'm not ever going to put them in school, and I'm going to teach them how to surf. And so that's what drew me in, was this hippy dippy alternate lifestyle. And there's all this great footage of the kids learning to surf. And I think they had 7 kids, maybe more.
Yeah, it looks like it on IMDb. There's a lot of people named Paskovitz on here.
Yeah, so, that's their last name.
So it looks like they've got like 6-7 kids here.
And so more. At first, it's kind of just like an interesting look at this unique way these kids were brought up. But then they start talking to them as adults in present day, and it starts to get bitter.
Hmm.
Like it's and then it gets really bitter. Like, one of the guys says something like, most people say you don't swim with sharks because it's dangerous, and they send their kids to public school. My dad thought public school was dangerous, but let us swim with sharks every day. but as adults, they begin to lament some of their lack of education, lack of ability to, like, one of the brothers says he decided to like go to college. So he went through like GED stuff and got to talking with a college advisor who told him he was still roughly 10 to 20 years behind anyone else that would be admitted to that program.
Wow.
And he gave up. He was crushed. One guy, two of them are musicians. One guy had written a song about his dad. And he tells the camera, I realized one day it was never going to be okay until he was gone.
Hmm.
And then he plays this song that he recorded that he wrote about his dad. And he turns to the camera and he starts singing along with the lyrics. And it's like cringe. And I almost turned the channel. But within 30 seconds, he starts getting really angry.
Huh.
And it turns from cringy to like super real emotion.
Wow.
About how fucked up he feels about the way his dad raised him. The movie ends. They get all bitter and start fighting with each other over money, because at some point they start this surfing school and they keep thinking somebody's trying to steal it from them. And the movie ends with a present day-ish, I think the thing came out in 2007, reunion where everybody agrees to bury the hatchet and come together, I think in Hawaii. And it's just them hugging and the dad crying. But I left that movie thinking, man, he fucked them up good. And there's no way to unfuck it. And he did it for this, his own philosophy. I guess he moved around the world. He would look for jobs in towns that hadn't had a doctor for decades, and he would go be the town doctor in the tiny little town.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, fix scrapes and burns and then go surfing all the time.
Huh.
Fucking fascinating document. I don't know if it's good.
That's interesting.
I was riveted. And like, I think most good documentaries, it starts out kind of seeming like one thing and then reveals there's something else underneath. Mm-hmm. And so I went and told my wife about it immediately. And then I think I emailed you guys, and maybe I didn't. I was like, she just told me to buy that fucking thing. So I bought it. It's coming today. She's going to watch it. She's excited about it.
You know what? That is a documentary. That's a documentary. That's not a Michael Moore type of thing.
Yeah.
It's literally, we started out trying to figure out what the story was.
Yeah.
And once we keep at it, it becomes a different story. And that's how you know that you're watching a good, realistic portrayal. Because, you know, somebody with a different point of view would go in and say, like, you know what? Let's make this all like a happy, heartwarming thing about a dad and his family and stuff like that, and not allow any of that rage and all that stuff to come through.
There's another doc that my wife and I are watching to come here called Three Identical Strangers. Have you heard about this?
Oh, yeah. That's coming to the Belcourt soon.
Is it? It's in theaters now, and it's about three identical triplets that were somehow separated at birth and in their high school years discovered each other and were even like pre-internet viral famous on like talk shows and whatnot. And apparently that's just the first few minutes of the documentary, and there's all this dark shit that happened after.
Hmm.
And I don't know anything about it, but of course my wife is like, we're seeing that. Susan comes to town.
That's supposed to, I think it's either tomorrow that opens.
Oh, awesome.
Or in the Belcourt or next week. But yeah, it's it starts off all like, you know, the guy's like, yeah, he said that I was walking down the street and somebody called me by this name, and he's like, you're that guy. And I was like, I know of somebody who looks exactly like you or whatever. And then he runs into it. So it's, first off, it's people who think they're twins.
Yeah,
who are,
they don't even know the third one for a while.
Yeah. And then the same sort of thing happens. They're all in the same, but I think they're all in the same area though.
I think, yeah, again, I haven't seen it, but reading about it, I think the third one sees the two on TV.
Yeah.
Talking about discovering their twin, and he's like, I'm one too. Anyway, I'm fascinated by that. So that's my recommend, Surfwise. Uh-huh. It's pretty short. I found it pretty fascinating. My warn is a movie that I'd never heard of, and it's called Novitiate or Novitiate. What? Why are you laughing?
Movies that you come up with, man.
What?
I mean, it's great. It's awesome.
So this is literally,
you go deep cuts, man.
Melissa Leo is in this, and it's about a girl whose mom took her to church to show her how crazy it was. But when the girl grew up, she embraced it and decides to become a nun.
Hmm.
And with my own upbringing, that was compelling to me. It's actually a little sexier than I realized going in. It's kind of like that Robert Downey Jr.,
short before Tropic Thunder.
No. Satan's Alley.
It's kind of like that with nuns. And Melissa Leo's playing like, I compare her very much to Meryl Streep in Doubt. That's what my Doubt reference comes from. She's like the super strict nun. And this is during the time of some kind of reformation within the Catholic Church in the 60s or 70s, where a pope had decided the new Vatican was what it was called. I think it's a real thing where they've announced that priests should no longer stand with their back to the congregation, but turn and face them when they preach. And nuns are now considered lay people and not holy. And so Melissa Leo's character in this movie is hanging on to the past, and she doesn't want to let any of these new Catholic rules take place. And then the girl from The Nice Guys, who they're trying to find the whole time, they find her in the yellow dress, mm-hmm. and then she eventually gets killed. She's the main character here.
Hmm.
And she goes to nun school, and I guess like the second stage of nunning is called, you're called a novitiate, which is where the title, I didn't know any of this, I'm not Catholic. And she kind of has like a sexual awakening, and it feels like the movie's going to go the little hours there for a little bit and just get all like lesbian sexy. And there is like, it's actually nothing graphic. There's one scene of her by herself and another scene where her and this other nun start to kiss, and we don't see much more than that. But by the end of the movie, she comes full circle. I'm going to nun it up. I want to be in a relationship with Jesus.
Mm.
And she's one of the only ones from her whole class of like 24 at the start of the movie that makes it all the way to the end and becomes a full nun.
Wow.
Anyway, not very good. And didn't, you know, because it was so extremely Catholic.
It sounds so intriguing for a bad movie.
It didn't really even hit any of my preacher's kid buttons like I thought it would. And so, yeah, that's my. I can't really recommend you watch this movie, even like for any reason. Like, if you wanted to be titillated, I'd have you watch The Little Hours. If you wanted to,
what is The Little Hours?
That's the one with Aubrey Plaza and They're like, it's like a movie that's intentionally R-rated.
Allison Brie
and Allison Brie's husband, Dave Franco. Mm. There's like lesbian sex and a threesome in that movie.
Kate Micucci.
Yeah, it's really? Like, it's like a comedy,
huh?
Sex R-rated-y kind of a.
Hmm.
I definitely don't own a copy of it.
I definitely won't be watching that after we're done with our podcast today.
And then, you know, like Doubt, like if you wanted to like immerse yourself in a Catholic discussion, watch just watch Doubt. There's not much reason
I'll
to watch
make
this
sure
movie.
To avoid this.
So there you go.
I'm going to go with a similar theme for my recommend, and this is a show that I think both of you would really get into for different reasons. It's called The Sinner. Have you heard of this?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of this.
Oh,
this
you and Jonathan were talking about
Jessica
this.
Jessica Biel, right?
Yes. Jessica Biel is the executive producer, and she's the star in the first season. And Bill Pullman is the other, like, main star.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good show. It's got a limited run. Weirdly, and I guess shows are have already been doing this or are going to do this, it debuted on USA, the network, and Netflix at the same time.
Hmm.
Huh.
I don't know if Netflix released the entirety of it and then USA just kind of did their regular weekly thing. But it's all out. And in fact, the second season just started, just dropped, I think, a couple of weeks ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good and really complex and a little bit fucked up show.
All right.
So it has a... I'll get to that in a second. So it opens, and it's not a spoiler. The first episode, Jessica Biel kills a person.
Mm-hmm.
Does it very violently and gives herself up to the police.
Mm-hmm.
After she kind of goes into this fugue state, and she's like, it kills a stranger. And she admits to it. She says, I did this. I'm going to plead guilty, all that stuff.
Is this like Law-Abiding Citizen?
Man, I
this
hope
is
so.
Not like Law-Abiding Citizen. Somehow it's even more fucked up.
Okay.
And so that's the premise of it. And she, one of the detectives that's investigating the case is Bill Pullman. Now, I've never been a big fan of Bill Pullman, the actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some great roles, Zero Effect. He's had some, Independence Day is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get into the cut of his jib, though. Mm-hmm. I don't really like how he presents stuff. Spaceballs, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
This dude is fucking amazing in this show.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
He is, he's got some affectations, but you can tell it's part of the character. It's not him. And he has some really intense moments where it's unlike I've seen him do anything like.
Mm.
I don't know how that sentence came out of my head, but it's unlike
anything.
I think
people know what you mean.
It's unlike anything I've seen him in. Jessica Biel is fucking amazing in this.
Makes
in
you
this
wonder
show.
What's going on, man. Like, it's been no secret that TV has started to very much distance itself from movies over the past few years. And I remember seeing something from Paul Schrader who was saying that, like, all my friends are going to TV at this point because mm-hmm. you can't write what you want anymore with movies. Like you get good independent films every once in a while. Every once in a while, a miracle happens and something from the studio is really good. But it's not like it was in the 70s where you could just tell the story that you wanted and not worry about studios interfering and all that. And it's happening with TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like every time this like new show comes out and it's like, you know, it's going to be on this network, it's always amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you said The Center, I was like, oh, is this another fucking series that's amazing? Great.
Yeah. Whereas I think I've probably said this before, but just in the 90s, just a handful of years ago, the big thing was, could you break from TV into the movies?
Mm-hmm.
Because all the Friends stars had their first. George Clooney made The Peacemaker. One Fine Day.
That was something I was hearing with. It was Mila Kunis that was on Mark Maron's podcast, and she was she was still in the era where after that 70s show, it was still like a stigma maybe to try to go from TV to movies.
Because Topher Grace didn't do it. I mean, he did, but he didn't do it successfully.
Yeah. I mean, the only guy who really did it successfully was Clooney. And it took forever for him to even get traction with that. David Caruso tried it.
Yep.
It didn't work.
Hilariously.
But yes. there was always the stigma, like, veteran actors would tell young actors never do TV.
Yeah, and which is weird because Jessica Biel started off in Seventh Heaven,
mm-hmm.
and then jumped, and then Timberlake, and then jumped back.
Never was a real big movie star.
No, never was. But she's always been solid in stuff that I've seen.
Yeah,
Summer Catch.
Catch.
Of course,
exactly.
Summer Catch.
But the more
I now
that
pronounce
you
Chuck and Larry.
What seems like a very straightforward story about her killing the stranger on a beach. It's just like, oh, well, I guess that's but she may have a traumatic past or whatever that would compel her to do this. There's a lot more going on in this. A lot of religious stuff, a lot of shit there's one scene early. This is why I like this show. There's one scene early on where in her flashback when she's a little girl, you could tell that the mom is arguing with the dad and the mom is holding the younger sister in her arms. And the dad says, screw it. I'm just going to sleep in her bedroom. And he comes in and he takes his shirt off and everything and he kisses her on the head and it cuts. This is, I think, in the first episode. And I'm like, man, all right, I know where this is going. You know, it may be a character exploration and stuff like that. It's not that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something completely different and somehow more bizarre than that. But it's fascinating. So I would totally recommend this. Both Jessica Biel is fantastic, but Bill Pullman is really the guy that you need to watch here.
Yeah.
And the story, you'll think you know where it's going. Second episode, I was like, yeah, all right. Well, now it made its twist, but I know where it's going. Third episode, same thing. It goes in directions that you just don't expect.
This is your Sharp Objects.
By the way, I was thinking about that a lot when I was
just
this.
In here 2 weeks ago talking about how I thought Sharp Objects had spoiled who the killer was,
uh-huh.
and now I don't give a damn. I do not care who the killer is.
Oh,
I am much more invested in other stuff that's going on.
So in other words, I'm going to be watching Sinner and Sharp Objects and the what the
Shattered Fingers.
The Little Hours right after all.
I'll do a quick wreck-a-warn because while I was waiting for something, I guess it was for the video to upload or whatever. I needed a short movie to watch just to fill the time to kind of get some info on, this segment and everything. And so I was browsing HBO and there's a movie called Lady Macbeth on there.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at it, 89 minutes, had a 90% Rotten Tomatoes score aggregate. And the average was really, really good too. I mean, that's pretty good pedigree. I'm down with that. It starred nobody that I knew. Florence Pugh plays the central character. Cute as a button, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautiful, beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
the movie shows her to be something completely different. And so it's a story set in rural England back in the 1700s or so. And she is married off to a loveless husband just as a piece of property, basically. And so she starts a torrid affair with the stable boy. Also seems very straightforward, right?
Mm-hmm.
This movie goes in fucked up directions too, man. Mm. And ends in an extremely fucked up situation. It's interesting. It's compelling. I am good with watching art movies. I'm good with watching good movies. I'm good with watching movies that take their time. In fact, I want more of that.
Mm-hmm.
This movie goes for long stretches of nobody doing anything.
Hmm.
And it pays off, but not enough, I don't think, to sit through those long, boring, nothing is going on. If you have this on DVR or something like that, just fast forward. If it looks like a place where you want to fast forward, fast forward. And get to the good parts.
Is it like the Brown Bunny where it's like somebody, like he's like washing his car in real time?
Yes, yes, yes. There's literally, and it's meant, it's there for a reason. There's no score. There was very little score in this. It's meant to show you her apathy.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's sitting because she's supposed to be the proper wife. She gets all dressed up and she sits in the sitting room
mm-hmm.
while her husband goes off and does stuff. And she's not allowed to fall asleep. She's allowed to basically just sit there in case anybody comes by. And it will show you her sitting for minute stretches that will feel long.
Wow.
And that's why it's a wreck of warm, because this is a good movie. Everything's framed perfectly. It's like a Wes Anderson movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is gorgeously shot.
It sounds like almost kind of like how Ghost Story played a little bit. There's this sort of this, I don't know if it's a movement or not. Maybe it's just, I don't know. But like Ghost Story is pretty short, but there are long stretches of just, you know, people sitting there and doing nothing.
Yeah.
And like, and it really does create a mood. I don't know though if that works for something like Lady Macbeth.
Yeah,
and which, is it following anything Macbeth at all?
A little bit,
okay,
a little bit, and I won't say much more.
Is it almost like a slower Rosencrantz and Guildenstern?
No, not anything like
What's
that.
What's funny is really I flipped related. By this last night and didn't even look at it. To read the description, I just assumed it was a retelling of Macbeth from his wife's main
It's not. It's a different thing. There are parallels. There are things interwoven, but it's not based on the play or anything like that. I get witch vibes, the Vivitch vibes.
Yeah.
What else did I see in there? It was
In that
Phantom Thread. There's a little bit of that in there.
Yeah. Well, and Macbeth has the famous witch.
The witches, yes. Doesn't have any actual supernatural stuff in this. But man, now that I keep talking about it, it's probably worth a look. Just know that there's going to be stretches in there that may drag.
Mm. I'm assuming we don't have enough time.
Shockingly.
For questions.
As we do.
Well, you know, we had so much to talk about concerning our grocery needs.
That's right.
Well, so, we did just do an episode entirely of questions.
That's true.
We did.
That's true.
We did.
That's true.
So, yeah, these questions will once again have to be sidelined, and we'll answer them sometime, I think. Sometime. Keep them coming. We will get to them eventually.
Yeah.
You can reach us on stuff like Sincast, presented by CinemaSins on Facebook, SoundCloud. There's a Twitter page. There's Reddit. There's a million different ways.
We got some interesting news coming up. Stay tuned. In the next episode, we'll tease at least one big fun thing coming up.
Yes.
And maybe two.
Yeah, maybe a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some big things coming up.
Yeah.
But that'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Scherer. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
We got other fish to fry. We got other Alicias to Vikander.
We got other bish to
bish
swish. Probably going to be like five attendants in the men's room. You know what I mean?
Like, one handing you toilet paper.
One to hold your dick. One to hold. It's great because you've got like a handle. The fact that I'm not Instagramming this right now is insane.
Oh, is this the Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle?
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
I do too.
Until the last 30 minutes. And then I'm just like, ah, it's any goofy CGI action movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was reading, I did not know that Kazdan made that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Jake. And I guess he was talking about the sequel and they're still kind of working out what they're going to do. But the writer of the interview threw out the idea that it'd be the same kids in real life playing the game. And the same avatars, but they're all using different avatars this time.
Oh, nice.
So all the actors, Jack Black and The Rock and Kevin Hart, will get to play a different teenage trope or what have you.
Yeah,
so like
that.
Kevin Hart could be the girl this time in the man's body, and The Rock could be, I don't know.
Yeah.
The Jack Black. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
I think Jack Black should make a comeback, like a real comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Get into
who knows
more
maybe
of a prominence.
Before that can happen, he needs to do his serial killer guest appearance on Criminal Minds.
Yep,
because that's a rite of passage.
I guess so. Who else has done that?
Everyone,
really?
Yes. Like I have this weird fascination with this show. I can't
You're
stop
still
watching
it. Yes. Is it? It's on like Sundance or something like that.
Multiple channels run marathons all the time, and it's terrible. It's awful. It's just. Wrote bullshit I could write in my sleep. I keep toying with the idea of writing a spec script.
You should.
Every single time they cut to any one of them with their real life at home, husband, child, what have you, it gets robotic as fuck. But anyway, Jason Alexander is the first one that comes to mind. But Amy Madigan, all kinds of famous people, Carradine, dozens of famous people have done played the serial killer.
Interesting.
Dean Cain? Yeah. I'm telling you, it's rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't watch that
show.
This
is the one about FBI profilers, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But mostly sex crimes.
It's probably not going to be that clock buried in the walls movie or whatever the fuck it's called.
No, and I loved that book so much growing up. I loved that, I forget the author's name, but I read all of his shit.
Oh, yeah?
And it's weird because the character in the book, I read those things obsessively. The uncle in that, I always pictured as like a Doc Brown type of character, like long and lanky, crazy hair and all that stuff. And so Jack Black playing him is like Tom Cruise playing Jack Reacher, basically.
Yeah.
Like
what are we talking about?
The House of the Clock and its Walls.
This is brand new information to me. Is this a movie that's coming out?
Yeah. It's
next month.
It's like a kid's horror fantasy, like an R.L. Stine type of thing.
And Jack Black's in it?
Jack Black's in it playing
even though
uncle.
He's doing Goosebumps 2 as well?
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like a Goosebumps imitation.
It looks like a Goosebumps imitation. Now this book, I don't remember being it was like a lot about the mystery and a lot about like, you know, the history of the family and stuff like that is really fascinating. It wasn't because I read Goosebumps too. Those didn't really interest me all that much. So, but I think they're making the movie to look like Goosebumps.
Did you ever read The Hardy Boys?
All the time. Yeah.
Why new generation making that shit.
New generation or old generation?
I read two versions of it. One was the 60s or something like that.
That's the one I read.
And one was those blue covers.
Then there was those like ones that they looked like they were just trying to churn out Hardy Boys because it was like 47. Yeah. You know,
I think I had at one point on my bookshelf, I had like two shelves devoted to those little blue trade paperbacks.
Yeah, the mystery series that I got in most though was the Three Investigators.
I never read that.
Those were great.
Really?
Yeah. That is to this day the only time I've read a book like in a sitting.
Huh.
Was reading a Three Investigators, and I had like about 18 or 19 of those books.
How old were you?
I was probably 11, 12, somewhere around there.
Somewhere I can get my boy into?
I think so.
Yeah.
Jupiter Jones is the main guy.
Interesting.
Which was what was funny about Jupiter Ascending, because Mila Kunis plays a character named Jupiter Jones.
Nice.
And
nice.
I think we even put in a Three Investigators joke in there, like for the five people who would know it.
I actually put a flash drive in my pocket, the only flash drive I had at home, and then changed my pants this morning.
It used to bother me so much.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you would put an article out and there'd be like these people, and you got to realize that those are like a minute amount of mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
They're just, they're tiny little wastoid fuckheads that have nothing else to do.
I agree.
Wastoid fuckheads?
That's right.
I like that.
Wait, we should put that on a shirt. Wastoid fuckheads. Or just at least write that into a sin somewhere. I watched Call Me By Your Name the other day. It's all right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I struggle to see exactly why it got that much.
I have no idea. The subject matter is uncomfortable to me. The scenery is gorgeous. Stuhlbarg is really good.
Maybe that's it.
Army Hammer is good.
It's good performances, and it's you know, a sort of an adult, even though he's 17, but like it's an adult relationship, and it's you know, it's set in a time, of course. It's the only time you can really set it, apparently, mm-hmm. where, you know, it's, you know, they there's a sort of a danger to it and everything. Yeah, it's an okay movie. It's not anything that's just like, oh my God, I got to watch that over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I think the one time is enough for me.
Is it called Dog Days? It came out then.
Dog Days. It came out this week.
It came out today. Yeah. It came out today. So Ken Marino directed this?
What?
That's weird.
Who's that?
Ken Marino's like a David Wayne regular.
He's the guy in fucking Wet Hot American Summer. And
he's like always Children's Hospital. He's the guy who claims that he banged a whole bunch of chicks. And
oh, okay.
Unless this is a different Ken Marino. That's fucking. It'd be so weird if he's the guy directing this. Oh, it's him.
Wow.
He also did shit.
How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, How to Train Your Dragon. How to Be a Latin Lover.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He did How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did that too.
Interesting.
I guess he's just trying to expand his
good for him, man.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Maybe he loves dogs.